Mike is hot.
We're hot.
At least something's hot because we were cold.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. We were a little chilly last couple days. So yeah, right now I got the famous Paul Frame.
Tall Paul.
And our other basketball star in the corner, Bradford. Yeah. So all three tallest people at Go Hunt.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Went on a hunt together and we just got back yesterday.
We did.
Which yesterday would be December 1st. This podcast is going to go out on Thursday. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we were hunting over the weekend and made a quick rally, and we're back.
Yeah. A quick rally.
Quick rally.
Yeah.
Really quick.
Yeah, if you're going to do it with the biggest guys in the office and get it done quick.
I mean, the tallest people can hike the fastest.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. From the farthest. 100%. It's kind of a requirement, I think, for Go Hunt is everybody has to be over 6 foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what are our collective heights here? What are you, Hunter? Are you 6'7". Six, six? You're 6'7"?
Yeah.
6'5".
6'5", and I'm 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a big crew. Solid basketball.
Yeah,
we do. A couple of like point guards, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's all we are. Point guard.
Yeah. This day and age, yeah, we're point guards. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we just got back. We're going to recap Paul's elk hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah.
And what an elk hunt it was.
Yeah, it was something.
So we're diving into too much of the details yet, but it was your first time ever rifle hunting?
Yes.
And first successful elk hunt?
Yes.
Any other first on there?
No, it's about it.
First, those two?
Yeah. First successful rifle elk hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, first time passing up bulls.
Yes. Yes, first time. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I did it all. If I was going to do it, I was going to do it.
Checked all the first?
I was passing them over. Okay. Absolutely. I was being as picky as I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
before we dive in, I got some little house cleaning items to go through. So we have our postseason roundup.
We do.
Coming up December 11th.
Thursday.
Do you want to dive into some details on postseason roundup, what people can expect?
Yeah, postseason roundup, we're going to be kicking it off December 11th, which is a Thursday.
Go Hunt headquarters here in Las Vegas.
HQ. Yeah, 5 p.m. We're going to have some pizza. We're going to be doing beers. We're going to be doing giveaways, a big community event. So it's pretty much like Go Hunt company party, community party, end of year. So bring your antlers, bring your skulls, bring your stories, bring your families. Hang out with the Go Hunt crew the whole night. Let's have a nice time. And let's end the year off strong with a fun party. So it's kind of our way of saying thank you to our customers.
Yep. And all the public's invited. I think there's an RSVP link that we've been sharing around socials and emails, I think. And it's free. We just want to know what the headcount is. So sign up on there. And it's free to come by. Pizzas, food's beers, free. Food.
Yeah. And then we're going to donate. Have we decided?
Yeah, I think it's so all the proceeds from the raffle. We have a bunch of prizes. Last year we had crazy prizes this year. We're finalizing right now. More awesome prizes this year. And all those proceeds are going to go to the fraternity of Desert Bighorn.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. Cause we got some cool stuff coming up with them too.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep it local, keep it homegrown. That's cool.
So it'd be cool. Give it to them and they can continue to do awesome work, along the, for the sheep around here.
Yeah. They awesome. Do a lot of work. I know if people are interested too, there's a lot of Guzzler builds coming up. They could always use volunteers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're a great group of people to work with.
Yep. So we got that. We also have our 12 days of insider giveaway.
Yep.
We do. That's always a good time.
If people are unfamiliar with the 12 days of insider giveaway, it's going to start December 13th. And it's basically like, what is that song? 12 days of Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. 12 days of Christmas. Mm-hmm. So every single day, the prize increases. So day one will be one prize. Day two, two prizes. Day 12 is going to be 12 prizes. Rumor on the street is, let's tease it out right now. Day 12, we're giving away 12 Browning rifles.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
My God. If I can say anything about that one, get you one.
Yeah.
Get you one.
Get you one.
Because it worked really well for Paul.
Yeah. They drive tax.
So we'll have 78 total winners in December. So you have to be an insider member to win.
Yeah.
And you can sign up. If you're not an insider member, you can sign up that day. You have till 11:59 p.m. that day to get entered in that day's prizes. Then you're entering, obviously, throughout the rest of the giveaway.
Yeah.
And then you're also going to have the best of the best research tools for upcoming app season. Which leads me to another thing that if you're not an insider yet, use promo code podcast when you sign up and you're going to get 50 points back to the Go Hunt Gear Shop. So $50 you can spend on anything in the Go Hunt Gear Shop by using promo code podcast when you sign up for an insider membership. And we got a bunch of upcoming, you know, application things coming up. Idaho's draw December 5th through the 15th for your non-resident general season deer and elk. Alaska draw is the 16th of December, and then a bunch of other states are rolling out. I think Wyoming is February 2nd for non-resident elk, so a lot of upcoming deadlines to start preparing for. Now, one more thing, too. So draw odds, We're having draw odds coming out early next week. So most likely the week of, let's call it December 8th through the 12th, we'll have updated draw odds for.
So they can realistically start planning as soon as possible.
Yep.
For a lot of these.
That's exciting.
And yeah. I believe we're dropping majority of states all at once too.
Oh, well, okay. I know before it's been kind of tough too.
Yeah, sometimes we like stagger them out. Wyoming first, Arizona, because those are the first two deadlines. But I do believe we're launching majority of the states next week. So
that's awesome.
That'd be really cool for all the insiders and new insiders who are about to join.
Yeah, I think I know people might think like it's a little early, but I really think it's an underestimation that these application processes, they roll up on you way quicker than people think. It happens so fast.
Yeah. Everyone has family, lives, busyness, and they're like even us. It's always the last minute for me to apply.
100%.
Trying to do all my research. And like,
there's a lot that happens.
That's why it's nice when we get our tools early and we can start researching now for all those upcoming hunts and check out draw odds.
Yeah, have that list ready when it gets here.
Because we were already talking on the hunt, like what I'm excited for next year, what I'm going to try to draw and start planning already. Because now my season's done.
It's that time. Start planning.
Well, I have an archery deer tag still, but
it's true.
Yeah, so I got to wash all my clothes and pack them back up.
Head back out.
Well, technically, if Paul didn't kill so early, we would still have until Thursday to continue to hunt. Yeah, so season way to end Thursday. My season early, Paul.
Yeah, but you know what? I knew everybody, we had things we needed to get done, so I thought, you know, let me throw this one on my back. Let's get the team out here.
Yep.
Get it done.
Just really wanted to get it done while I was there.
And I knew too. Like if you left, I was like, oh my God, we're going to lose a guy and get this bull on the ground.
And then, not to jump ahead, but I'm glad we had an extra. to pack the bull out as far as I was. So, let's jump into it.
Okay.
So give me the backstory.
Backstory.
On where it all how you got this tag.
Yeah.
I mean, just briefly touch on your season up to this point too.
Okay.
Like what have you been doing month of September?
Yeah. So September, I killed a turkey earlier this year.
Yep.
Omar and I and Joe went out west and killed a turkey in California. Started planning, getting in shape for archery season. Drew what I was excited for my Nevada mule deer tag.
Mm-hmm.
And then I drew a Colorado elk tag in a unit I was in last year. So I was excited. I was familiar with the area. Body's in shape. I felt really good. Archery hunt was rough and hot, and I learned a lot, though. It's a great hunt. Colorado, same thing. Learned a lot. Got in on some bulls, which was really exciting. Just the bugling was really low, and it was really hard to figure out if I was doing something right, doing something wrong. So lessons learned there. So I came home, and then that's when the conversation started to go around the office of we weren't done yet. We'd all had pretty rough seasons.
Mm-hmm.
We were wanting to fill our freezers and still wanted that just one more cast kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all had first come, first serve, which is a great return tag opportunity that Endow offers. And I had it up in the showroom nonstop, missed a couple tags here and there, thought it's okay. It's going to happen the way it has to happen. Buddy Mike came in, we're chopping it up. And then a customer came in and had some backpack questions. And so I went to look over at my screen to start a transfer. And this unit popped up for antlered bull rifle. And I clicked it into the cart. And I could not believe it went into the cart. And like 30 seconds had gone by before I realized, oh shit, I got to pay for this. Mm-hmm. I clicked it again. It was still there because someone can buy your tag if it's in the cart. So I paid for it, chose my address, this, that, and the other thing. It said, congratulations.
You had an elk tag all of a sudden.
I had an elk tag all of a sudden.
Just like that.
I purchased it on a Thursday. The season started the next day.
Yeah.
On Friday. The Friday, which is like the Thursday. So that Thursday I bought the tag. The next Thursday was Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yep. So that was the season opened November 20th.
Yes.
That would be?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had to like professionally check back in as the customer was talking to me about the transfer, and I saw the tag come up. I kind of looked at him and said, "Would you give me a minute?" And I don't ever want to be unprofessional. That is not my thing.
You're the nicest guy in the world. Everyone around here knows that. You're the most friendly person.
The guy's like, "Oh yeah, I'm sorry, man." I clicked it and I looked at my buddy and said, "I just got the tag." And the customer looks and he's like, "What just happened?" He wanted in on it. We all sat there and started talking about it. And once the customer left and the showroom died down, like shock set in, I started shaking and trembling. I jokingly went over to Lorenzo's office and Porter were talking. I just knocked on the barn door and said, "Hey, listen, just wondering, do you guys have any info about this late rifle tag?" They're like, "Why?" I said, just nonchalantly, the joke was like, I just got one. And Lorenzo's like, "The hell you did?" And I was like, "No, I just got one." And Porter's face just dropped and he started just like, dude, oh my God, so excited for you. And then I went to Brady's office and I was just like, Brady, like he could,
he was literally just shaking. And you're like, your voice was not sounding the same. Like you read like that trembling. Like, I'm so excited. Oh, so excited.
God, I mean, to work. And you guys would understand this because I'm still getting, like, I still feel like I'm getting into that vein of like a true Westerner. Growing up in California, it was kind of difficult. You got the opportunities you got. Most times it was like, unless you knew someone on private for pigs and turkeys, it was deer and bear. And other opportunities, duck, quail, so on. So still getting my feet wet in like Western applications and getting out on your own or solo hunting or finding friends to hunt with. It was just been a journey. So to finally have a tag like this come across the table, it was just like a dream. I mean, a dream to hunt that animal in the state of Nevada late season is this hands down to me is the best state for awesome bulls.
Yeah.
There are big bulls in other places, but I just think our quality and quantity of them is top.
Yeah. It's so special having a tag here.
So talking to Brady and then all of a sudden collaboration went through where we all sat down. It just felt like fast forward. And we were all sitting in Lane's office going over like, hey, look, I wanted to go like the next day and try to make this happen. I think it was best that Porter and you guys reeled me back in a little bit. It was like, hey, look, let's have our holiday. Let's eat some turkey. Let's revisit this Friday.
Yep.
We got a cameraman lined up. He landed. So the Friday after Thanksgiving, Brady and I hit the road, and you actually had already headed up.
Yeah,
headed early up that Friday. Morning. Yep. Got to pre-scout it, and
we have to backtrack a little bit.
Oh, sorry, I'm gonna.
Okay,
excited.
Yeah. Don't say her name, but I had to get permission from my girlfriend, and so I think I was here. I was getting ready to head to Formula One because she had got tickets from a friend for us to go there. And I was like texting her. We were all talking about like who can go.
Yeah,
and it was determined like it was like Brady, you should go, and I'm like I'm in.
Yeah.
But I told my girlfriend, this is the first year that I will be here for Thanksgiving because I'm never here for Thanksgiving. I always have some hunt going on, but it's the first year I didn't have a hunt going on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And luckily, she kept saying like, oh yeah, I absolutely adore Paul. Like you should go with Paul, but you have to be here for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And that's why then it was determined we're going to leave the day after Thanksgiving. Yeah. So I was technically here for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But then I was still packing on Thanksgiving and getting ready to go.
We fulfilled the obligation.
And then we could.
She was essentially our executive producer on this whole thing. Yep. I had to get her to sign off on it. I kind of joked and said like it was the more like a make-a-wish hunt. just Brady, his rifle. please, can you go? She was so supportive and great about it.
Yeah, so it was phenomenal. She said, yeah. For Paul, yes.
Because you've also been on a ton of hunts.
Yeah.
You were gone quite a bit this year.
It's been really busy.
So like there's also some of you internet trolls take it easy, but like the scheduling for family time and other obligations, it gets eaten up a lot during spring, fall, winter, scouting, 100%. Our work obligations.
Yep.
So to get time away from family truly is a bit of a schedule and a chess match.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can easily find yourself gone way too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Yeah.
Yep. So
not me because I don't get tagged.
So I think that will, the 19th, you got the tag.
Yeah.
The 20th is when I believe I was going to F1.
Mm-hmm.
And then while I was there, I think we were texting and fully finalized that, we're going to all hunt together and go. We got the cameraman. Luckily, the cameraman was able to go on a short notice. Then we started planning that weekend of, hey, we need to go out and shoot rifles.
Yep.
What's your experience shooting a rifle?
As a kid, it wasn't great. It was just my dad's old 270, and it was very different laying there and, not having, at that time, proper technique, a proper setup. Mm-hmm. You just had a loud bang and a kick, and there's some expectations. So obviously getting older and understanding how to handle your firearm and comfortably shoot it and shoulder it. After shooting the muzzleloader video, I felt very comfortable. Like, I should probably consider, right? The technology now and bolt and guns are so different.
Mm-hmm.
So when we sat down and really got comfortable, I warmed up a little bit with Norris's rifles.
Yep, so we went to the range on Sunday. Way before the hunt, like 5 days before we were leaving, four days before. Yeah, Norris brought some rifles.
Yep.
I brought another training rifle of mine too. What did I bring?
The Cross.
Yeah.
6.5.
6.5 Creedmoor, my Cross rifle from SIG.
Yeah.
And we just started like getting you trained up on some smaller rifles first before we went to the 300 rum.
Yeah, getting comfortable with technique.
Yeah, breathing. Hand placement.
Yep.
Trigger placement, pressing the trigger, body position behind the rifle, how to acquire a target through the scope. And, like I'm whatever reason in my SIG, it was a little bit difficult at first, but it's like,
yeah,
that's like that, just getting comfortable, like how to acquire a target really quickly and how to shoot the form. And so that was really awesome of Norris to bring a bunch of his guns. And obviously I had my two. So we started shooting for a little bit. And
we reached out and touched some steel that day too.
Yeah, we reached out really far and touched steel.
Yeah, I think we reached out over 800 and almost 900, or over 700, over 900, and got really comfortable. It was that lean in, slightly push, breathe, like that hand placement, knowing the pressure, you know, similar to archery, you kind of go through all of your shots and your processes and putting myself at least in a situation to learn. You have an opportunity like this on a great hunt, don't be stubborn, listen. That's what I was thinking of it. Also, shooting a 300 rum, I was a little nervous.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of gun.
Yeah, it's a big gun. And you just nasty break on it.
It's just like
too.
A butterfly with sore feet. You press that trigger and it just wow.
Yeah.
Keep put your hearing protection in though.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Be prepared.
Night.
There. Yeah. What was the one thing I told you about your thumb when you were going to shoot my gun?
Bring it over to the side.
Yeah. I said, if you cross your thumb over that rifle and grip it, I'm going to break your thumb off.
And so I crossed it over on the side.
And I was wanting to make sure you understood the proper hand placement. So I threatened you a little bit.
Kept that little finger right there.
90 degree pointer trigger.
Press
it like a keyboard.
Like a keyboard. So set it on the side. Easy to engage safe. Cheek was all set up. Everything else. Lean into that bipod a little bit. And then, you know, make sure my bubble, those RPM rings with that little bubble level on the side, make sure that was all good to go. And man, it was just smooth. There's a couple of them you could tell if I wasn't in it, it pulled high left, or if I was too far in it, it would shoot low right. So finding that right pressure, because in those other ones, it was on the bolt and just right of the bolt, which would have just been, could have been a lot of things at 900 yards, right? But that little bit of learning those things, knowing that weapon and how it was developed, that was so helpful. And then the confidence felt good of, okay, I mean, to address the elephant, being with you, your rifle and your experience, it was like a cheat code for sure. But if you're going to learn it, that's how you learn it. You know, so I think that was where you put yourself in a position to be around people to influence you, to educate you, and to help you learn. That is helpful. Because if I go to build my rifle, it's the same thing.
Yep.
And you could pass that to someone, which I think is helpful. Yep. So,
One of the things I said yesterday, which I don't know if you heard when we were doing those post-hunt interview things, is your level of willingness to learn. There's a lot of guys when you take them to a rifle range and you're trying to like teach them rifle things, like most people are pretty stubborn. It's mostly guys. Like women are always great. They'll listen exactly, like do the right thing, take everything you say and then like execute it that way and don't try to go back to bad habits. Like you were just soaking it up like a sponge. And I think it's probably a good thing that you are very proficient with archery, because you know, like that whole shot process, how it works and how everything has to be perfect every single time to break a perfect archery shot. It's the same similar thing on a rifle. Like you cheat one thing on a rifle, like I was telling you, if you do anything bad right here, have a little bit of hand torque, you're going to see it when we're shooting really far. And I want to make you so you can shoot far. So hopefully we don't have to shoot far in the hunt, but like prove to you that it can be done with proper technique. You just like soaked it all up and did it really, really well. So it was good on you for doing that.
Just that idea, that one shot we had, it was high left. And you said, well, considering the plate, this and that, and I asked you, like, but on a kill zone on an animal, is that still lethal? Because my concern is this isn't on a plate, it's on an animal when this shot cracks. So that was my little worry. Okay, we'll just breathe and dial it in. And I felt like if this was the opportunity to ask the questions, we're at the range, ask them now. Because I'll be damned if I get on that mountain and something happens. And like, you know, because it's one of those things where it's like, you had time to ask me. And I listened to you a little bit more and know, like, if Brady's opening up that time to talk, if anyone does, take the time to learn from them now.
And ask questions.
And ask questions, because none of them are dumb.
No.
I think it is dumb. I think you're correct. If people want to, that's fine. If you don't want to listen, that's okay too. But if you're going to put yourself and open up yourself to a little bit vulnerable, look, you know, we're around a lot of people that have killed a lot of animals. I am anyways, you are, you know, and if I ask you a question, it could go south. Like, what are you, dumb? I am dumb, but I still need to know the answer. You know, I still want to know because I want to be good. I was just, that opportunity was awesome because I was so comfortable. And once I squeezed that trigger or pressed that trigger on that gun, I thought, oh my God, it was so soft. Just the whole thing, it came back so clean. You were right back in the sight picture. It was really, really comforting.
I think one of your last shots, you were like an inch off the absolute dead center. There's a bolt right in the middle of the target and you almost smacked the bolt.
So I think that was really comfortable. So that led into the rest of the planning for the week. So I felt like, check that box, we were good. And then it was getting gear together because it was going to be cold.
What was your thought, Hunter, when you called through the tag, and you almost had a first come, first serve tag too. So
yeah, he actually, the day after he got that tag, I had a chance to get a tag, but I'm glad I didn't buy that one. And I think it had a better experience going with Paul on this one. But when I found out from someone else in the office that he had picked up a tag, and then I kept trying to poke out into the showroom to talk to him, and he was with a customer, and then he saw me one of the times, and he mentioned it. He's just like, "Oh, by the way, I got this." And I was like, "What?" And so from there on, it was just like, my first thought was like, I want to be on this hunt. I want to be there. I want to be a part of it. We've been talking about hunts all year long.
Yep.
And the fact that then he picked this tag up, it was just like, oh, I got to be there. I got to be a part of this. And so the fact that it all worked out and lined up and I got the green light to go, I was ready to roll from the moment I heard he got the tag. So I was pumped.
Mm-hmm. That's one cool thing I think about Go Hunt too, is the hunting culture. If people can go on a hunt, they want to go on that hunt. Like, people want to share with you, help you pack it out, so on. That's really, and I know a lot of other people share that, but yeah, we've talked a lot in passing. If you could do this hunt, what would you do? All right, we'll think about it. And then, yeah, we were the same thing. We're like, man, I just want to get out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we needed something else. We needed another hunt, and luckily this one popped up.
Yeah. We started leaning on a few people in the office, trying to get some intel. Made a few phone calls myself, did a little e-scouting. That was kind of really essential, trying to figure out exactly where we want to go. Because obviously we'd have zero time to go boots on the ground scouting before the hunt. The hunt was already open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. The next day is to get the tag. So
it couldn't have been any more like buzzer beater, half court.
Yeah.
You know, bases low to bottom of the ninth kind of thing. But when I was on my archery deer hunt, there was a couple of times I was looking at bulls, and in that terrain that we have, that big PJ terrain, you're like, man, this is just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible to see. And there's always one of those, like, man, I wish I had that tag in my pocket.
I was hunting elk here.
And then it was neat to finally get a great tag. I'm still kind of just like high about it. It's insane.
And it's not, we won't say the unit, but it's not just an elk tag in the state. It's one of the best elk tags.
Yes.
Pretty good tag.
It's a pretty great tag.
Man.
So yeah, we all had Thanksgiving, and then somehow the next day you got packed all ready to go to head up. So Hunter was going to basically scout the day. Mm-hmm. We had to wait for the camera guy. The camera guy didn't land until like 2:30 in the afternoon on Friday.
Yep.
But you got up there ahead of time, and you were trying to look at some terrain.
5 a.m. that morning, got up there and kind of just drove the unit, just kind of not really getting in anywhere, but just covering bases and looking at faces, seeing if any bulls popped out. And again, just kind of seeing where people are at too. I mean, we're starting the hunt, middle of the hunt. So it was more getting a feel of what's going on up there right now. Mm-hmm. And, I think it all worked out really well, but it was nice to just be there. And I was seeing guys driving around, some bulls on trucks, and I was seeing where people are at, and had a good feeling where we were planning on going was going to be pretty empty. And that's what it ended up being. It was just us up there.
Yeah.
Felt bad though, because we didn't show up till, 10 o'clock at night?
Almost. Yeah, it was like 10.
10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Got dark at 4:30.
Yeah.
So you're just saying, like, we had the wall tent.
Yeah.
And then Paul and I were talking. It's like, man, we should have gave Hunter the wall tent. Yeah. So maybe like attempted to try to set
start
up.
Start setting up.
Had the stove going in there for her, so it's all nice and warm. And you're just sitting in your truck the whole time waiting for her.
Yeah. I was getting ready to leave, and I was like, wonder what time it really gets dark. And I looked at my phone. I was like, oh boy, this is going to be a long few hours in the dark sitting in the truck. But
yeah,
it was exciting. Every truck that came down the road, I was like, is that them? And then Paul finally texted me, you guys were 30 minutes out. And I was like, okay, all right, they're going to be here soon. So that was...
At least you had a good spot picked out for us.
That was the thing. That was my other one. Is like, just find us a good spot with the wall tent. I mean, we need room and some space, and it worked out great. That was a great camp spot for that big of a wall tent, too.
Yeah, the wall tent's huge. I don't remember the feet. I swear it's
like 40 feet long. The thing's
30 something feet. It's giant.
I will say, if anyone is thinking of like late deer or elk, wall tent.
Oh, it's the best.
Wall tent or bust. Or if you want to do a hotel room, that's fine too. But a wall tent for like that camp feel.
Yeah.
Cots, stove, tables. Yeah, that feel like that. That added to. I know we'll get to that, but I just wanted to say that's the way to go.
Can't beat it.
Yeah. Because we had kind of set up the hunt and thought about two different ways. Like, we were going to set up a base camp as a wall tent. First, it started as my mini wall tent that I had.
Yeah.
But I was like, it only fit you and I, Paul. And then we have Hunter and the camera guy who have to sit in like... just tiny little freestanding tents, which would probably be way too cold for them.
It'd been cold.
So then it was a decision like, why don't we just bring the giant wall tent and set up an actual true base camp. But the strategy in a sense was go up there, maybe take the first day and kind of hike in really far. And if we see elk, like maybe we can continue to just day hunt it and just have mm-hmm. super early mornings and mm-hmm. then really late nights by just hiking long distances. But if we need to go further, mm-hmm. then we'll take the teepee and the stove and go mm-hmm. backpack hunt it.
Yeah.
So we actually had, you know, multiple setups with us at camp. So we could do either, we could base camp hunt or we could backpack hunt. Cause we mm-hmm. don't want to pigeonhole ourselves to either technique, but we want to kind of look at the terrain once we got up there, figure out where the bulls are at, and then yeah. kind of make the decision for the rest of the hunt. But
yeah,
so we got there super late at night. I don't even know what time did we go to bed on Friday night after we got the wall tent set up, got the cots built.
It was, I think it was like almost after midnight because like you asked 12, like, what time do I want to get up? 30. And I said like 4.
Yeah.
Because we knew what our hike in would be.
Yep.
We knew what our distance was as yeah. far as time. And then we also had approach yeah. heading in.
So yeah, here's a funny, people aren't going to be able to see it, but maybe I can show it up there. You're getting ready to go to bed and it is 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
You're just finally in your sleeping bag.
Yeah. That's after we finally got set up and everything. And that's when it started. And so.
When did it fully hit you that like, I'm going on a sweet elk hunt?
Yeah.
Was it when we finally got to camp? Were you already like pretty excited on the drive up? Like when did it become truly real? Like
on the drive up, I just felt like I was heading up on a hunt with Brady and the guys. Like I was like, we're going to meet Hunter up there. He's camping out. And then we got to camp and I was like, this is a nice little camp spot. That's, you know, and that was it.
Yep.
Set up camp, got comfy. And that just kind of felt like camp. Like, man, this is so cool. And just being with the guys and it's a good vibe, a great vibe.
Yeah.
We got up. And then we got all of our gear on, got everything set up, ready to go.
Yeah, we woke up at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Got going, got to the trailhead, and I looked up. And I was like, oh, shit, this is big.
Yeah.
Big. Yeah. And we got to the top, and like the first time, I think it was you that said, we have some elk.
Yeah.
You spotted those elk.
The cows.
Found
the cows way over there.
Then it was like, okay.
Oh, that was when I split up from you guys.
Yeah. So you went a little further
up. I was a little further up the trail, yeah. And I was actually on elk, too.
Yeah, you were looking at elk.
I was like, where are you guys? Yeah. Why aren't you guys behind me?
Yep.
And then you run out. And then we got up, and then we saw, and I don't want to jump ahead too far, but then we saw that first bull, and then it hit.
That's when it hit?
Yeah, that's when it hit. Like, mm-hmm. oh, shit.
It's real.
This is real now. Like, this is a bull that I can heavily consider. I passed on him. That we can consider. And then my brain, when I was talking to you guys about like, I like to measure twice and cut once on things. Then I started thinking about, okay, if he's on this side of the face, what time is it? Where is he heading?
Yeah.
And then that bull left and a second bull came out. And that's the bull we thought like, okay, hold on. Yeah. He's not bad.
Yeah.
Then my brain really started to go, okay, time, that slope and aspect, all these things that go through my mind of just animal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we kept moving and moving and moving, like that, it had already set in, like, this is what we're here to do. And this is what I'm a part of now.
Yeah. It was really cool to me when we got to the spot, we parked the side by side and started hiking up in the dark and just like, you could kind of start seeing across the canyon. Yeah.
And it's all starting to like, show itself a little bit.
Like how big the country is. Yeah. Like we're in such a cool area.
Yeah.
There's no one else up here.
Nope.
That was wild.
We like drove to all these other little camps on the way up and everyone was still in bed and we're hauling all the way up there. And we start hiking up dark, you know, just getting up higher and higher in elevation. And then, seeing those first elk.
Yeah.
Like when you guys were behind me, you guys had the elk on the opposite side and I was sitting there pulling up my spotter, looking at that bull. Yep. And then you got up to me and you spotted the bull that was below that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And looking at both those bulls, like I think I turned to you at one point and it's like, here you are, you're going to finally pass your first bulls up.
Yeah.
Because they were first good time. Bulls. Like I was looking at the video a little bit ago and that one bull that I first saw on top, he's actually, I think he's very similar to the bull you killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he's weaker on the thirds. Mm-hmm. He has a little better fifth point.
Mm-hmm.
But very, very similar to yours. And we were like, we're going to pass him up. I think he was a little bit narrower.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a good thing we passed him up.
Yes. Yeah,
it was.
But like, how did it feel seeing a legal bull, not just a legal bull, a big legal bull.
Yeah.
And like, it would have been hard to go put a play on that bull. It probably could have done the same thing. We'll talk about later how we killed this bull.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what did it feel like knowing like, hey, we're going to pass up the biggest bull probably you've ever seen with the tag in your pocket?
The second one bull that went up and over, I didn't think about. I actually thought the second bull was a little bit nicer as far as character
they're
and everything
right,
else.
They're right,
both really big, nice bulls.
Yeah.
And so looking at that one, I thought, okay, if we are going to pass, and the reason I'm not being picky, it was just a matter of terrain.
It would have been pretty nasty.
Yeah, it would have been a mission to get over there.
And like even to like glass them in a different area. Like if we dropped down and came up, we might not be able to turn them up.
Yeah.
Or it's just
aspect. The luck of the game. If we had to get to a different aspect to find them from one way or the other, it would have just taken us all day to even get a glimpse.
And they were heading into like dark, dark timber too. So it'd have been tough to pick them back up probably.
We got like 8.5 hours of sunlight.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to make that window work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it, finding that those two bulls and them going over, the first thing I thought was, even if he is on that side, we're going to make it work because this is like my commitment and and you guys with me, our commitment of I'm with the guys who are probably the most down to do this.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case. No matter
where an animal is, we were going to be game to go and try to kill it.
100%. Yeah. And I thought, once I saw those two, I thought, okay, we got some cows back here, first two bulls. Like this is going to like probably start to materialize really well. And then when we saw the next group across the canyon, I was like, okay, this is just incredible.
The cool thing too about those two bulls, which we talked about a little bit when we were up there, is like no one else can glass them unless you're put all the work into where we got to glass across. Yeah. Like you can't glass them from down low.
No, not from the road.
And they're pretty much safe. So if we needed to 3 days from now, and maybe those are the biggest bulls we could see, we easily could have went back and tried to kill them.
The temperament, the time. That one bull sat on that face for what felt like 30 or 40 minutes feeding in the same spot. 20 by 20 spot.
Yeah.
And it felt good to know that when you separate yourself from the hubbub and the traffic and you get in an area where they have their guard down, you have an opportunity to close that distance. So it wasn't the terrain gnarly, sure.
Yeah.
But the ability to probably get in on him, that was like, this is probably going to happen. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but holy shit, this might be going right.
Yeah.
And then that's what I thought. Even if the rest of this day turned into just a scouting day and we had to go after that bull, but for some reason I felt like he's just not going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to stay on that side and that's fine. Yep. But I have a feeling that whatever we're going to find is going to be incredible. So, yeah, it just started like snowballing to this surreal.
Yeah. And I think then after we did a little digit scoping, we put you on the spotter looking at that bull across.
Yeah.
And then shortly after, that's when you saw like 50 head of elk on the other ridge.
There's a bunch of cows going over the top.
Yeah. There was just elk everywhere on that side of the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everywhere you looked, you'd find elk.
Yeah. Yeah. They're already piling up and over to the west.
You started getting a little excited looking at those bulls, the first two. We could see it in your eyes. You're like, oh, these are good bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then looking across, it was just cows, but I thought, okay, that's fine. And then I thought, if they're lower, then what is further?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we packed that up. Still a little cold, but a beautiful day. Holy crap, what a beautiful day.
Yeah, it was calm.
Yeah. So
and you said
quiet.
The day before it was windy, right?
Yeah, it was windy when I got there all day.
Yeah. So that made me excited right away. I was like, I looked at the weather and it was supposed to be calm all day. And then it actually was calm on the mountain. So I was like, for a rifle hunter,
can't beat that.
Yeah. This is absolute ideal.
Yeah.
Ideal. Super crisp, cold. No wind.
Yeah.
Bulls just acting like bulls, just walking around late season, not really worried about anything.
Yeah.
Knowing you could probably find them again because they're not going to go anywhere.
No. Yeah.
So we just kept marking all the bulls. I marked all the elk we saw in the other places just so we can have backups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Packed everything back up. We had to take the down jackets off and that was a little chilly again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're standing there and
got
getting cold
quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. The minute you stop, it sets in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe not the minute, but you know what I mean? Like within those few minutes, cold.
Yeah. Instantly. You feel it right away.
I mean, it wasn't uncommon that if we stopped the glass, our down pants and jackets were on.
Came on.
Hands are in your pockets, and you're just sitting there over the glass and staying warm.
Yep. I think then from there, it was probably another hour hike.
Yeah.
Got up further.
Yep.
Yeah. Got to another
vantage point.
And
that's the area we actually wanted to get to.
Yeah.
I think our 4 o'clock wake up time was a little late.
Yeah.
But we didn't know what it was going to take to get up there. Yeah. And then we saw bulls right away, too. Yeah. So it was like, okay, we're into elk.
Mm-hmm.
But we boogied up to the next spot and start sitting down. And it's one of those things, again, it's happening more and more lately, but it's like you always want something to happen. Like literally sat down and I think 2 minutes later, it's I got elk.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, I think they're bulls, they're the color of bulls. Yep. And then I think you got your spotter up before I did. And then you saw the big bull.
Yeah. And I was like, there's a good one in there, Brady. You need to look at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. it was cool too. Cause I think it's, I got it right here on my phone. So the first time I put Digiscope up was, 8 o'clock on that bull. That group, there was a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bulls right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was really cool.
That was quick. I was just sitting down and kind of looking across the hill at some other animals, And then I hear I have bulls. And I was like,
that we were looking at too.
There was a lot of them. Yeah. Holy moly.
Please.
Yeah. And I kind of felt silly because I have these 10 by 42s. I'm just staring. I'm like, I can make out the bodies, but I can't see much. And I hear Brady behind me. He's like, you want to take a look at him? And I swung around and look. And anyway, I don't want to jump ahead again, but it was just, you said, wait till he turns. And I was like, he's it.
I remember I was like, when I said it's a good bull and Brady got on him, he's like, we looked at each other. That's a shooter.
That's a shooter. Yeah. Instantly we knew that bull is a shooter bull.
Yeah. Yep. There was no, he was unbroken. Was it? It was just like, yep, that's a shooter.
Length. Big. Yeah. Clean 6x6, long beams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could even see, I think we even might have mentioned his thirds were giant.
Yeah, that was
there.
Like one of the first things, like, oh, his thirds are nice. Like,
Yeah. But, it was kind of funny that I'd be like, because we had the 10x42 EL ranges from Saguaro. And I was like, clicking, I had my binos on the tripod. I was trying to range. I'm like, I'm not getting anything.
Yeah.
And I tried moving a little closer, still couldn't get a range.
Yeah.
Moved closer, still couldn't get a range. I was like, those bulls are like two miles away.
Way further than they look away.
Yeah. They looked a lot closer. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh.
I got a video of you. You're looking over your digiscope and you were leaning over from your spotting scope. You're like, I cannot get a range.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome.
They were so, but it looks closer.
Oh, they did not look that far away by any means.
Yeah, they were.
They were.
They were.
Yeah.
So the only trouble is like, I don't think if we probably would have saw those bulls at first light and been there, we couldn't have killed those bulls that morning.
Mm-hmm. No.
No way.
But it was like, it's so random to say, but it's like it kind of worked out for a reason. Like, mm-hmm. sure, we saw the bulls earlier. Mm-hmm. We hiked there. Instantly, we turned them up, and they're probably up on their feet for, I don't know, 15-ish minutes before they went into the aspens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we got the look we needed, saw the big giant bull.
Enough time too.
Yeah. And I think I kept turning to you. I was like, just watch him. Watch exactly where we're in bed.
Yep.
We're going to just keep glass around, see if we can find other bulls.
Yep.
And they went in the timber, and then I think we started just finding.
There was just
bulls everywhere.
They were just popping out everywhere.
Yeah. So those bulls are already bedded, but then across the canyon, there was just all over the place. Yeah. No matter where you looked, you were finding bulls.
Yeah.
But you're not finding them down low.
No.
They were like mid-hill. It would be nice to kill them. Everything is on the top of the mountain.
Yep. Yeah. And back and in.
Yeah. Deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were in really great areas. I think one area that we were in, it was too flat. And I don't mean like flat ground. I think like there was no topography.
There's not like the mountain is literally straight up, straight down, steep.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of like side ridges that come down to try to like get on that face to try to shoot. It's like flat, like you're saying.
Yeah, it would be a real chore if you were trying to at least get down and up.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting across it would be insane.
Yeah,
I mean, it was over 1,500 yards.
They'd have to be in the bottom.
For you to shoot across. Exactly. And if you did, like, that thing would probably roll to the bottom and snap everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would just have been a nightmare.
Yeah, the bulls knew where they needed to be safe pretty much because of just steepest terrain ever. No angles you can get there. You have to get like 50 yards from them. But the problem is getting 50 yards is you probably blow the whole herd out because you can't know exactly where they're at.
And it's all scree, so it's not like it would be quiet by any means.
Mm-hmm. How many bulls do you think you saw over there?
I think from what we saw early and then once we moved, I bet you there was at least 20 that I picked up in those pockets right there. It was just everywhere you looked. Mm-hmm. It's like, in the timber, you start seeing some tan moving. It's like, there's more bulls in there.
Yeah. We had one bull that had some extras on him, right?
Yeah, that first one we saw in that first group we saw on the other side. Yeah, he had extra on the top end.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's pretty cool. Looks like a big old like crowned roll.
Yeah, like a crown like on the top.
Yep. You know, I never even saw it. I just kept staring at ours.
Yeah.
I was like through the binos watching that one go into the trees and you guys, I kind of just checked out, I think, because I didn't know that there was another bull that, but once I saw him, I wasn't going across anywhere else.
No.
I didn't know we had an extra one though.
Oh yeah. He wasn't like he just had an extra. That was the coolest part about him for sure.
Yeah, yep. He wasn't as framey. He didn't have big beams. Yeah. He had short beams. Some just mass, cool stuff. But like, and that was the hard part too. Is like everybody you look at up there is like, is a good bull.
Oh, they're good.
They're all gorgeous bulls.
Yeah. There's no shaming any other bull. It's just I think a matter of perspective.
100%.
Yeah. You know,
the age class is phenomenal.
Yeah.
100%.
No, you don't really see a lot of. I mean, there probably is a lot of like raghorn type bulls, but a lot of them are just mature.
A lot of solid 6 points just running around everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some thinking to do.
Yeah.
And so obviously we had our bulls that went into the aspens and looking at the aspens and how that we could actually see a little bit of topography there, but where they entered in is just aspen C beyond them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of dark pines in there. And I was hoping they would just go into the aspens a little bit, find that dark pine right there and bed really close to the edge. I was like, that seems like what they should do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
'Cause there's 100%. No feed on the other side.
No,
it's just a sea of aspens.
There.
There's nothing down below. It's all aspens. Above them's all aspens. So we felt pretty good about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think sat there for a while where we had lunch, made some coffee.
Mm-hmm.
People took some naps.
Yep. Yeah, I might have fallen asleep a little bit.
So I started making a kind of a game plan, but we also didn't want to like rush it over there, even though it's going to take us a long time to get over there. It was just like, well, we know where they're at. Let's keep looking for other bulls, drink some coffee, kind of enjoy it, soak it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I think...
About 11?
Yeah, I think it was around then. I'm trying to pull up some photos here.
I think you were finally like, what do you think about making a play?
It was about 11:15 because I remember you had said the night before that you had saw those cows at about 2.
2, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We
wanted to get up there.
Because I mentioned to you, I was like, if those cows are out at 2, and then here's the funny thing, too, is at that time of the day, those bulls were still feeding across the canyon. They did not lay down. Yeah, they didn't stop. The
bulls across the canyon were up super late.
They fed like all
so I figured if it's going to take us X amount of time to get over there, by the time we probably get there and get set up, they could be back out, or we might be there in time.
Yep.
I wonder if they're up on their feet longer too, because then the next day it was going to be that storm.
Yeah,
it
was going to be really windy and it's going to snow.
Because all morning, it was snowing and windy that next day. So
So
I think we must have started heading up. Yeah, 10:45. I had a bagel, and then 11:15 we were working our way up. And that's when you found that elk shed.
Yeah. Started making our way through the topography. It's a good thing we did because there was a lot of climbing.
Emphasis on a lot of climbing.
A lot.
Yeah, like a lot with an asterisk because it was a lot.
Yeah.
More than it looked like on the map, that's for sure.
Especially when we got, after you picked up that shed and we got up to the top of that canyon, I was like, it looks like it's just a saddle all the way across on the map.
Right. I remember we were talking about it. We're like, this is not what it looks like on the map. It just looks like a nice, easy saddle. Yeah. And no, it's like it's all the way down and all the way back up.
It drops several hundred feet back down, and then we've climbed several hundred feet back up and higher.
Yep.
Yeah.
To get into where we were trying to be, just to try to be almost at a, like eye level of where they went in.
And I can't, we dropped down that thing, started coming up the other side. That's when I found those side-by-side mule deer sheds and almost ran you over.
You did. I heard like a little kid like, oh, and I look over and I can see Brady's arm like kind of like sweeping me out of the way. And I look, what the hell? And he's just kind of scrambling across. And then I saw
the times. Because you were in front of me.
Yeah.
I guess that's what my brother and I would do. We always try to play a game like whoever sees the sheds first and calls it out. So I'm like, I made sure, like I said, sheds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're mule deer. Yeah. And I was like, maybe they're, you know, giant 190 inch.
Could have been.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, side by side.
Yeah.
You never know.
But hey, sheds are sheds.
But yeah, they were just like 110 inch mule deer sheds.
Yeah.
And they were old. And I was like, I don't know why I'm packing these things out. But I was like, Hunter has a big rack on his back and he looks cool right now.
It's
for good luck, too.
Yeah. Kind of want to throw him on my back.
And Yep.
No shed left behind.
Early on.
We just kept sneaking up that ridgeline. Stupid steep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at one point, we saw what the rock pile we wanted to get to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we started side-hilling over to that rock pile. And then we get there, and it's like the terrain just didn't quite look the best. And we were so far away.
Yeah.
Like way too far.
Still way too far.
Like 950,000 yards away. And then we saw those little aspens up on top.
Yep.
I think this is the time, too, where your hunger got the best of you, Hunter. And he was like, I can't wait to get those aspens. I'm going to bust out this biscuits and gravy. That's all I could think about.
Yeah.
That's all. It was the peach cobbler. And when we get to these aspens, I need the peach cobbler. I need it.
But the aspens seemed they never came.
They didn't
like,
get closer.
I just all of a sudden, we started hiking and we lost sight of the aspens because the mountain was so steep. And we're like, where are these aspens?
Yeah,
they have to be here somewhere.
Yeah.
They never showed up.
They never showed up. It took so long to get up there.
That was funny. I remember that we were trying to just think about getting to the ridge, and I just hear someone behind me, I'm going to have that peaches and cream when we get there. I was like,
all I could think about. Yeah. Oh, I was so hungry.
Oh, dude's hungry. Yeah. There was a lot of food consumed on this trip.
There was.
Yeah.
Bodies are working hard trying to keep us warm.
Yeah.
And hiking.
Yeah.
That was a good climb. And then when we got there, it was, I remember you had just said, like, the minute we get there, hit the ground and do just start glassing and do not move.
Yeah, I usually try to explain to people that situation because I have a lot of people that don't understand that fully. And I'm trying to be a dick, but I'm like, we get up to a spot, we're going to expose ourselves for a little bit, so we have to get on the other face. Like, get there as fast as you can and sit and then take your stuff off.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
No one moving around, no one walking on the ridgeline. Like,
just get on the ground.
Just get on the ground.
Yeah.
And just play it safe because you never know if there's like something down below, mule deer, another elk that then you spook and it runs up to where we're hoping the bulls are going to come out.
Yeah.
And they blow those animals out. So it's best just to play it safe.
Yeah.
Talk about it ahead of time, the plan of attack. Yeah. I think we got up there right at 1:00.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got up there early.
Mm-hmm.
And what time does it get? Sunsets around like 4:17,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have till about 4:47 of shooting light. So we have plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was still nice too. It was still fairly warm. We sat on our slope.
He had your peaches and cream.
Had his peaches and cream.
Got happy. I was good there.
He's good there. Yeah. And then we just glassed it.
Started glassing forever. I think you spotted the first elk. Like, I think I fell asleep for a little bit.
You took a little nap. I found a bedded bull, and then I just started picking apart that same area, and there was just bulls everywhere.
Yeah, and that was all the way across the canyon, which were
way too far away.
2.5 miles away. Yeah. But like, it was cool to see how many bulls were over there.
That's because I knew we weren't able to get to the half of these bulls. They were too high on that face, but it's like the amount of bulls in that pocket was... It was insane.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
About 2 o'clock, and then I spotted those does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Popped I say, there's the... some. We have some deer. And then Hunter's like, you sure they're deer? And I was like, they're does. So, and then you had said, if deer are pushing out, they're in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, if they're coming out the same face, coming out of the aspens, coming towards us, that means the feed is right there. Yep. And they were working that whole like edge habitat that we always talk about is like the money zone for animals. Like they love being around the edge. And they were hugging that aspen pine edge. I think I ranged them at one point. They were like 630 yards. So I was like, okay, that's a good sign. They're coming out right here.
Yeah, we had deer. We had deer down the slope below us. We had deer on another slope out in the sun. We had deer coming out of the trees. And we just watched them forever. And then you started seeing more bulls across the canyon and more and more. And then one got up and moved. And then there was a really good bull on that side.
Really good bull.
Then sun started to get low and it started to get cold.
Got cold quick.
Yeah.
Got very cold quick. Super quick. Yeah. Cold. Like, I think it was like right after I had that ramen.
Yeah.
A cup of ramen. It was I don't know why. It just got so cold up there.
That sun started getting low and man, it cooled off really quick.
Yep. And it was about 4 o'clock. Oh no. Golly. It was maybe more like 3:30. And I was looking at my watch like, man, sunsets at a certain time. And then that's when you go, I got a bull.
Yeah, it's 358.
358. You're like, I got a bull right across from us on the ridge. And we all look, and it was a smaller bull that came out.
Yep, it was a little rag.
Yep, and he fed for a while. And
then a second smaller, was that spike?
A little spike popped up, yeah. You started seeing him moving, and it was a spike.
Yep, and I kept looking at Brady like, now do I do? He's like, just, do I get on the gun? Just hold on, let's just make sure. And then you had set up your spot. You're like, there's something behind them. Yep. You could see him in the trees.
I kept seeing like... aspens moving. Yeah. And I was trying to make sure, it's like, is it like mirage? Am I seeing what? But I was like, there's two bulls here.
Yeah.
We saw a total of five bulls. I really didn't pay attention. I should have paid attention more, like what the other bulls were with the group. It was like, I swear there was some raghorns with them.
There was, yeah.
Yeah. But there was like a couple of good 6 points in our big bull that we're going after. And I was like, dude, he's got to be right there. Like, that's a really good sign finally.
Yeah.
And we had mentioned, I think earlier, that like ambush situations, like they don't always work out. Like, oh, you see something going into the timber, you're just going to go set up on them and they're going to feed back out of the evening. A lot of times it doesn't work out. But because we had the aspen situation, it was like, they're not going to go all the way through the aspens. They have no reason to. They were here in the morning. They're probably, hopefully that's their home for right now.
And there's nowhere for them to go the other way. That was what we kept talking about. I was like, there's nothing for them to go to if they popped out the other way. It's all aspens that way.
I briefly thought, like, if these two raghorns are out, a lot like cows or does that come out before that buck or bull does, like, they're just kind of searching. I said, so he's probably here. I don't know if he's going to be the fifth one out or the next one out, but he's probably with them.
Using them as safety.
He's just making sure. Because there's that one bull that he kept popping over and like he kept looking in our direction and Hunter kept saying like, don't move.
Yeah.
And he kept locking in and he'd kind of relax a little bit. He'd lock back in. And so I don't know what that might've been.
Yeah. But I don't know if he was maybe hearing something or not, but every now and then he'd lock onto us. Yeah.
Or he's locking onto that doe. Who's that doe was also
looking at us.
Yeah.
But I think I turned to you at one point. I was like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen fast. Like you don't have to get ready yet, but just be prepared.
But we talked about where we'd lay.
Yeah, we're going to lay right in front of me, and we'll make a shooting platform. You'll grab your, like, your glassing pad, kind of lay it down. We'll maybe take your backpack or take my little rear shooting sticks. But, like, it could happen fast because of where they're at. And I was worried that a bull would get on that ridge line and then get the one gap we could shoot, and then he'd dive back off his other side and just continue to feed there. So, like, if he's going to come up, we see him, we have to be ready to move really quickly. And then, I think we were watching that bull for quite a while. And then it was right after like 4 o'clock, like 4:10.
Seven minutes before sunset.
I saw some antlers.
Yeah.
And that's when I got real excited.
Yeah.
And I think at one point I was like, I think we got him. Or you saw the left bull first?
I think you said you saw bulls. I panned up. And then that's when I was like, I see the bigger rack looks like he's on the right. Like the bull on the left, it's not our bull, but there's something bigger on the right. And it was,
and you could just see his time. Yeah. Just like you could see his like big royal sticking up, and you could see the other one's body. You can see a lot of his rack, but you couldn't see that one's top of his back yet, but you could see
just the top.
And you know, right then, like if everything else matches, that's definitely our bull.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the funniest thing to me, which you know, could probably think it's funny, is I turn back to you, Paul, and you're trying to get your tripod set up. You're
running I'm fumbling, trying to get my binos on my tripod.
And I look over at Paul, I'm like, no, like, no. It's time.
You looked at me and you nodded at the ground, and I was like, pulled the rifle off the backpack, slid the backpack on the dirt, laid all down. You're like, flip it. Just then we started sorting out, legs were out,
set up, like, direction. It's time to get ready. Like, yep. this is going to happen.
Yep.
And then at that point, when I looked up, I could just see the beams coming like through, and I thought, oh my God, like he is coming over the rise. Yeah. So it was nice in the sense that he was feeding his way up. So he'd stop because then the bipod came out. I had a little bit of willows. I had to get my feet more behind the gun and kind of get my feet splayed out, get rested. Yep. I piled up some gloves under the buttstock.
Yeah. So to explain the shot thing and how I tried walking it through you, your backpack on the rear was a little bit too tall. So I kept telling you to flip it around and use that angled side.
Yep.
Because you had mentioned like, I need to make the bipod taller, but I don't want to make the bipod taller to then use the higher part of the backpack.
Yeah.
Because then the legs are so long in the bipod, which it makes, no matter what bipod you have, it's going to make it a little bit less stable because you got a little vibration with the legs being longer. So I wanted to keep the bipod as low as I could, still allowing you to shoot over this little brush that was in front of us. But then we just flipped your bipod or your backpack around so we can use a smaller part of it for your rear support of your gun. It's like, I don't want your gun, I don't want floating it all on your shoulder. I want something underneath there. And then we just, we grabbed all my down mittens and whatever we could just find to like shove it underneath there to build you a good shooting platform. I was like, we have time.
Yep.
The bull's not on top of the ridge yet. Do whatever we can right now to make that as stable as possible.
Yeah.
Because that's going to make your best shot.
I will say too, and this isn't some like pop, like some product thing, but that Tricer RP, reaching up and moving that lever so that way that bubble could get level. Yeah, you can even just like set your pressure. So if you want to move the gun, because you could let it off and that gun can go either way. Yeah. But if you have just enough pressure to let it rock and then just move those legs out to stabilize, it was really comfortable. Mm-hmm. And having that bubble level off the side was nice to kind of use as reference of making sure everything was still good.
Yep.
At first it was hard because it was getting dark. Mm-hmm. It was getting very gray in the scope. Waiting for him to come up, he was kind of quartered towards as he kept moving and moving. Mm-hmm. And then I remember you telling me at one point, like, he's going to turn broadside, and when he does, just hit him in the front shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he had his head down, and as he was feeding, his head was like right over the vitals. Mm-hmm. So once we were set, I turned up my magnification to really just put that bead on his, on my target area.
Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure you were comfortable with that whole thing.
I had to keep like moving back and forth because the gun kept like slipping, and that's when I grabbed your other mitt and I folded it and put it up. And once I did, I then felt the weight of the gun against my shoulder and I leaned into it a little bit. And we've talked about this a lot and I still won't. It's just crystal clear. I was on his shoulder and the crosshairs were moving quite a bit. And the minute I leaned into it, it just stopped.
Yeah.
And I was dead on that shoulder.
That's all the platform we built for you.
Yeah. And then he had his head down and it was a few seconds. You're just like, wait till he picks his head up. And he kind of picked it up a little bit, but he wasn't fully over and he had his head back down. You said, wait till he picks his head up.
Yeah. And like earlier, jump back a little bit.
Sorry.
I ranged him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Renzo, you saw this morning, he's like, oh, that's a really good pro move tip, like someone trying to help them out, make sure you're totally calm.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you the range.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you anything about clicks, anything on the scope. I just reached over, pulled your turret up, adjusted right to it.
Yeah.
Ranged them again because I saw him moving a little bit. Gave it one more click. I was like, okay, we'll just give it one more. Adjusted your windage for you a little bit and just left you be at that. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to tell you anything. You don't need to know. You don't need to know basis. And right now you just need to kill the bull. That's it. We'll discuss everything later.
Yeah.
I knew it was within our, you know, range because we're practicing and I know my gun and hand loads and everything. And that I've told you a million times over up there, like probably sucks carrying that, you know, close to 15 pound rifle, but it's going to be worth it. Trust me. Cause it shoots, it's dialed. And then we're talking about, the bull walking up on the ridge. At one point I told you, I think, okay, you can take him right in the shoulder, but then he turned and faced us like you were saying. And I didn't, like, you could have probably still shot him there and you would have got access to his shoulder, but I didn't know, like, okay, if you're not fully stable right now, I didn't know if you were shaking or really excited. I don't want to ask you and add any stress to it. But I want him to turn back his head back again to open up that shoulder more, to give you more body, more room for, to hit him. And that's why, again, I love shooting a big old 30 cal with a 208 grain bullet. Yeah. It's like, it's going to stop him.
Yes.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you just walk through the rest of it here, what happened.
So after Brady got me all dialed in, because they're like looking back at it, hindsight, you lay down, you get all set up. And then I think at that point in my mind, I thought, okay, once I'm set, what do I need to do? But it was done. I heard the turret. I heard everything else. got set up and he had his head down and he picked his head up to the right. And you had said, whenever you're ready. And I'd slid it forward and I said, going hot.
Yeah. I said, whenever you're ready, press the trigger.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's like, right. Just press the trigger whenever you're ready.
Right, and now, at that point, like that crosshair, I was already on his front shoulder. He just needed to pick his head up and move.
Yep.
To his
and
right.
He did perfectly. And then for a little bit, his beam was in the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you waited, because I was going to tell you, don't shoot him in the antler right now, because his beam was so
right.
long.
Yeah. It was right over the
vitals. Right over the vitals. And you're rolling digiscope behind us.
Yep. Yeah.
Out the whole time.
And are you, were you watching through your binos too, or just looking at the spotter?
Just looking at the spotter.
On the digiscope
and
footage?
My adrenaline had hit as the bull. As I'm watching him, and I'm seeing what it is. It's the bull we're after.
It's the bull. It's our target bull.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm starting to shake. I'm listening to you talking Paul through it. And I remember the last thing I remember is I'm watching you guys do it all, and Paul's ready. And I see you kind of just do a little push on the gun, get that bubble just that little bit more, because it wasn't quite there. And then I was like, all right, this is going down right now.
Yeah. And then I did one more thing too for you, because you had your gloves on the whole time. And I was like, I want you to keep your gloves on to be warm. Mm-hmm. But like when you're about to take a shot, even if you had the Stone Glacier.
The Merkel glove.
The thinner one.
The Chinook Merino ones. Yeah.
So like, I don't want you to get cold.
Yeah.
But when you're about to take a shot, and I was like, okay, take your glove off.
Yeah.
Because I wanted you bare finger on it so you can actually just press it perfectly without having like side to side movement or just extra stuff. And you like, just pull it. I didn't want you to pull the trigger at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bull lifts his head. You say, what'd you say? Going hot.
Going hot.
Yep.
And I just leaned into it, and I felt the trigger, and I just told myself, just keep. That was it. I don't really know what I told myself. I just remember feeling the trigger.
Blacked out.
Mm-hmm. And I just kept the crosshairs on that shoulder, and then the shot just cracked. I went straight back, and when I got back into the glass, like I was. Usually I'm surprised that the homework I've done on rifles is some calibers can kick you right out of the sight picture. I landed right back in this one, and I just see his back arched when I'm back in it. And all I hear from you guys is great shot. And then part of me was like, holy shit, if they're saying that, because these guys have seen it, mm-hmm. like this has to be good. And you told me, if he's still on his feet, rack a second one. Mm-hmm. So he was still on his feet and you're like, great shot. And I pull the bolt up, run it back, try to get a second one out.
Yeah, because I told you before, like you have to single feed it.
Yeah.
Yep. So you're gonna have to know where your ammo wallet is. You have the two rounds on the side, whichever one's easier to go with in the moment. Yep. That's why I like to set both of them out.
Yeah,
like, because your mind goes haywire.
I would have been better off just sliding one out of
the two round holder,
and just going in. But I looked down, I saw the wallet, and I tried to grab one.
And you grabbed a reverse. You were trying.
I grabbed, I was pulling the bullet in. Yeah, it's like grabbed it. And I remember I was saying, "Damn it, Brady, I'm sorry." And I grab it out of this way, and right when you say, "Like I think he's going down," I threw it in and just racked it anyways. And then when I got back into the scope, he was fully broadside going downhill.
Yep.
But you could see like all of his weight was on his front legs. And you're like, "Hold on, don't shoot."
Yeah, because he kind of like he was standing facing us for a little bit. There was, what, two or three bulls off
to his left.
Yeah.
Then he started standing there. You could see him start wobbling back and forth as you're standing. I was like, dude, you hit him perfectly. Yeah. Like, he's going to go down. But I was like, if you do get another chance here in a little bit, like, put another round in him. But then he kind of stumbled.
Into some trees.
And he kind of, like, looked like he, like, leaned his body into some sagebrush. Like, the sagebrush looked like it was kind of holding him up. But his back legs were kicked out.
Yeah, they were out.
And I was like, he's dead. And you were about to shoot him, and I was like, he's kind of moving. So I was like, I told you to hold off. And I was like, okay, he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, okay, if you can't get another round of him right now, do it.
Yeah.
And I think then we were moving your scope back and forth, trying to get your side picture back on him.
Yeah, I dialed out to see him, and then I dialed it back in, and there was a Y in a tree, and I could just see, like, center mass.
Yeah, he was kind of blocked. And I was like, well, if you can, maybe just get around in him anywhere.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, we already got one into him. Let's do our due diligence to get him down. But I was like, he's going down. And then, of course, a couple seconds later,
you said his rack's on the ground. I saw his rack tip over. And I think that's when I asked you, like, Brady, is he down? And you said, dude, he's down. You said he's rolling.
He put his rack down for a little bit, and then he picked it up one more time. And then that terrain was just so steep in that backside.
Yeah.
He started going ass over tea kettle and started rolling down the mountain, like, I don't know, 10 yards, 15 yards, and piled up again.
Oh. Yeah. Yep. And
then you were still on the gun.
Yeah.
Still on the gun. Wasn't backing off until like I knew for a fact he was not getting back up.
Yeah. Cause I told you other stories about my brother, how he hit a bull and it got up and it was just a,
you and I had talked about it too, in that film that you had where you hit that bull like three times.
Yeah. They sometimes just soak him up.
Yeah. And so being cold, everything else, I wasn't sure. I mean, the shot placement again, cause I didn't see the shot. Cause when I kind of backed out of the glass a little bit on impact, on the recoil, I saw him arch, but I wasn't sure where the shot was. Yeah. I just saw that he looked hurt. So when he turned broadside, you told me not to shoot.
Yeah, because like, both Hunter and I knew it was perfect.
Yeah, I think right away.
I said it was perfect. You said it was perfect. Yep. And it's like, that's a dead bull on his feet. Yep. Like, we both knew it was a dead bull.
Yeah, but I didn't want to get up until I knew that he was not getting back up.
You never want to get up. You don't want to start celebrating early. You want to be on it because that's you have to do it right.
Yeah.
And you want to put that bull out of its misery if he's still alive. But luckily, he died right there.
He did. And
this next part
in a pile.
Yeah. In a pile.
Yeah.
The next part was super cool.
Yeah, it was.
Paul's on the ground.
Yes.
And he gets up and gets a little emotional.
Oh, I start bawling. Just,
Paul lost it. Yeah. It was the coolest
thing. I lost my shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always will.
Yeah.
I love these animals.
Yeah. You gave us both the biggest bear hugs ever. Yeah. And I think you just went down to your knees.
He did. Dropped straight down.
I just started sobbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll probably sob right now. Yeah, I've talked about this a little bit with Nate too when we were talking, but I don't know that a lot of, and maybe people do, and I don't mean to diminish that, but I don't know that a lot of people understand how special it is to be a hunter, to share this experience on this hunt with this species. It's not a archery rifle, deer, elk thing for me. It is with my friends, the people I admire, the people who slug this thing out with me on a last minute hunt to hunt a dream. To take an animal like that, and he went down from a busted back a year and a half ago to being back in shape, to dialing everything I need to be successful, to all of a sudden at the end of the year, you just want to fill your freezer to have something to provide your family, and it turns into this.
Yeah.
I told my mom on the phone, I tried calling my mom on the phone. At some point, I was just crying and bumbling into a phone. Yeah, but exactly. I even told you guys, I said, if you guys don't mind, I just want to call my mom. They're like, dude, call her. And I just called.
You said, like, I don't know if I can even call her. We're like, no, you need to call her.
Yeah, you need to call her.
Yeah. Yeah. And I called.
Somehow you guys have service. And I'm assuming no service the whole entire time.
And she answers the phone. And the minute I hear her voice.
You lost it again.
Again. I lost it again. Because her and my dad have supported me a lot with my body going out and just journey after journey after journey. Just a lot of things going through my head. And when I saw that bull get hit and go down, I thought, like, this wasn't possible without you guys. This was not possible without the friendship, the camaraderie, the conversations, the education, all of it was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. So when he went on the ground, I felt like we did something amazing. Yeah. And my crying over these animals, I admire what our landscapes provide us. And this bull is my dream.
Yeah.
He's the most beautiful animal. And, yeah, I think I high-fived and hugged you guys, and I think I've said thank you every few minutes.
Yeah, like every couple of seconds, it was like a thank you. And even while we were hiking in the dark, you were saying thank you. And
it just
whole way out.
It was amazing. And then
the coolest thing is too is like we talked about the ambush and like set it up, like it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, like couldn't have gone more perfectly.
Us seeing the bull when we saw him in the morning, like 15 minutes before we were in the timber. If we were 15 minutes later, we'd have never seen him. But we left those other bulls at the time we did, hiked up further, turned them up, made a plan of attack, got up high, put all the elevation in miles, and then the bulls came out exactly where they went in the timber.
Exactly how we drew it up.
Like, yeah.
Couldn't have been any better.
No hunt goes that perfect. No. It happened for a reason because you deserved it.
Yeah.
100%. That's literally what it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember we got up and the adrenaline dump, I cramped.
Oh yeah, you were cramping.
I was cramping bad, and I saw Hunter, and his hands were on his head. He was like, "Oh my god!" Yeah. Just it was. It felt like it was 65 degrees. I was flushed hot.
Yeah, we all actually said we were really hot.
Yeah, we got hot. My gosh. I was shaking still. Yeah. I was like, just
it
was,
yeah. My hands were out of like gloves for a little bit. It's like I'm a guy who gets cold really easy. I'm like, I'm even warm right now.
Yep. Yeah,
like, just adrenaline dump is going on.
Yeah, and then we sat for a minute. We used the rangefinder tool, dropped a waypoint.
Dropped the waypoint over there. I took some reference pictures and video.
Yeah, because once you, like, that was one thing I was learning about this terrain is looking from here to there, you get to there, then you look back and you're like, this isn't even the same place.
No.
And it was dark off on us. Like, so by the time you got done calling at people, we sat up there, bear hugged for a while. Like, it got dark on us. And then, too, it was just like, I didn't realize how hard it was going to be with those aspens.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to reference it when you're on the ground over there in the aspen jungle to try to figure out exactly where it was at. And it's dark. You can't really look across the ridge. The moon, I don't think, had rose enough yet to give us some moonlight.
No.
But that hike over there was also fun.
Like, yeah.
We were kind of like joking around, like laughing a little bit.
Yep.
You said thank you again, like 30,000 times.
Yeah. And we got there and it was time to go to work. It's time to find him. We scrambled around a little bit. We went down, you went up, you went down, we went up. And then.
Yeah, we were just like, I don't know what it was.
Headlamps were dying.
Yeah.
We were losing headlamps like crazy.
Yep.
And then we started like talking. And it was like, where we're at right now, we're behind a ridge line. Yeah. Like, there's no way the bull could be here because we wouldn't be able to see it.
We could see where he was at.
So we started moving around a little bit. We tried referencing the kill shot and everything, trying to figure out exactly what trees we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, finally I was like, it can't be there. Like, you have to be maybe further out. And I looked at it. I was like, well, there's this tree here and there's a lot of boulders.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the waypoint. And I was like, maybe my waypoint's more correct than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And,
which it was.
Yeah. It was like 60 yards away from where the waypoint was marked. And of course I had to do the classic, hey Paul, you might want to,
you guys come back up here.
You might want to look for a bull around where I'm at right now.
I looked up and I just saw like a flicker of a headlamp.
Yeah,
we were way down the hill. Like we were both like, oh boy. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I sat there and then Nate came up towards me. He's like, where's the bull? I'm like, I don't know. We just got to wait for Paul to find it. And it was just like 10 yards behind me, but I was like, make sure I didn't turn my headlamp up at all. Yeah. It's like, the coolest thing is he finally got, it was like, Hunter got to me first.
You said the same thing to me too. Like, I don't know. It's somewhere. And I like just happened to glance back a little bit. And I saw it. I was like, oh, okay.
And then
Paul came up. I let you gather. You're like, breath for a little bit
for a second.
Because we're probably trying to book it up there a little bit, but also trying to be safe because there's all these boulders in the Aspen.
100%, just a slide. Just a slide. And it's cold. It's getting icy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Finally got up there, and I think I told you guys, like, give me a second, guys. I got to get my breath because it was kind of like, I think someone had mentioned, hey, listen, we might just back out and come back in tomorrow. It's cold enough. And I was like, it makes a lot of sense. Sure. You know, just I trust you guys. Yeah. But it was such a long, exhausting day, and I thought, okay, we're up here. And then you said, and then I took a look and I saw it and that was it.
Yeah. Your head was down for a couple of seconds and you're going uphill. I'm like, Paul, like, you're warm. You're very warm. Very warm. Lift your head up.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, your headlamp was right here shining and like the bull is right there.
I'm trying to walk in just seeing hair. Like, no, that's not him.
Yeah, I was like, just lift your head up.
He's like a foot away from you.
And this dude, I mean, an animal that big felt like he was in a ball like this up against this boulder. And holy moly.
What was your thought the first time you saw him?
Once we saw him, I wanted to like get him up and moved around. We tried to move him a little bit, but all of his body weight was on his tines.
Yep.
So we ended up kind of, once we moved him out and opened him up and
he almost cracked his horn.
Yeah.
Almost. I almost broke my own bulls.
The clean bull was almost broken. He
was wedged. His rack was...
His neck was like back and his antlers were forward and he was leaning against it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one, I think it was a G2, was like bent up underneath this boulder and like stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you could always see it was chipped off a little bit and his back... His main beam was chipped a little bit from the fall.
Because you said, see if you can grab his head. When I grabbed it, you could just hear that rock against antler.
I was like, oh,
and you're like, stop. Yeah.
Don't move him
anymore.
So
we ended up having to like wrench his neck around.
Stuck boulders underneath his back. Trying to like pry him up. Move him higher in the mountain.
Lift him off.
And then the idea was, what we were going to do was use his body weight. Because it was the boulder he was up against was actually like smooth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we thought if we could just slide him down and roll him over, we would. And remember that gnarly thing he had on his back leg?
I
think it was broken, like a softball. Broken leg or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It looked like it was completely broke. It was so hard.
Yep.
Yeah.
And all grown over and gross looking. But
once we rolled him over and he landed and I got there to look at, he was huge. He was a massive bodied, super long, like winter coat bull.
That's the first elk you've been up on, right? Like dead elk?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen him growing up as a kid, like in California, we'd see tule elk when we were dove hunting and I'd bugle at him or goof with him, or, you know, I've seen him in Colorado or other, but that is my first bull I've been on.
They're way more, they're way bigger than you'd ever could imagine if you've never seen one up close before.
There's Lorenzo's wife, Taylor, has that big pedestal bull. And I always, I find myself like when I'm in the show, I'll look at it, think of like, that's the height and the shoulder. That's kind of what it looks like. Gain some perspective and you see pictures of people knowing like, I know how big Brady or, you know, Hunter are like next to that bull. Yeah. But when you see that bull, they are a toad. To think of like all that hide comes off, all the meat under it, all the weight, they are huge, huge animals. And then once I sat there, I think you guys were telling me about pictures and something else. And it was just like, it could have been Charlie Brown. I was like, wah, 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 wah. And I'm looking at him like, it's just almost as if it's just me and him on the mountain.
Yeah.
That moment in time we shared, and being there, it's like I finally got to meet him.
Yeah.
I met my bull, and it was just, it was so special. And then
the coolest thing, seeing him earlier.
Yeah.
We getting saw up him there. Too. I said, like, I'm going to remember he's got that lighter blonde coat. Yep. He stuck out from all the other bulls. Yeah. They were all that, like, mustardy gold color, and he was so blonde.
Really light, yep.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when you said, wait till he turns, and I was like, he's the one. And you're like, he's the one? You want to pass on him? And I said, oh, you know. But I mean, when I saw him, I was like, he was so beautiful, unbroken, mm-hmm. just long.
The biggest bull in the whole canyon of all, like, the 27 plus bulls we saw that day.
And a great one biggest. On our side of the canyon.
Yeah, on our side, too.
That was the biggest part. On our side of the canyon, which is great. He found his little pocket. He was tucked in. And mm-hmm. the way we cut the distance and put it all together, like, it was just amazing.
And it was so cool. Once we got him flipped over, too, we could finally really see how big that main beam was.
Really, like, get a feel for it.
That main beam and that the third on his, was it left side?
Yeah. Oh, my God. He was so well put together and such. And he was, I think, still hands down one of the better bulls that were on that mountain to have happen. Not just because he's on our side, but looking at all the other ones, he was really good looking. And we did the photo thing and...
Got a bonfire going.
That was almost as good as a beer. That fire going was great. We regrouped a little bit, warmed ourselves up, and thawed out. And then
I told you we're gonna make the biggest bonfire that mountain's ever seen.
Yep. We made ourselves a really nice little rock wall and got it going. And I love the fact that at that point it turned into teams.
Yep.
We had the D-bone team.
Yep.
And we had the quartering team. Yep. And we just went through that hide. They're holy. Shit, that winter hide.
Sick.
If you ask the question, like, what do you want to do, shoulder or euro? And I said, I don't know. Like, what do you think? He's like, it's your bull, bud. I said, all right. Well, so I just kind of kept going up the neck. And as I kept going up the neck, it got thicker and thicker and thicker. I was like, euro.
euro
it is. Yeah.
After a little bit, though, like, we got done do the photo thing. We already had the fire. And we were kind of standing around that fire. I was like, man, I wish we moved the fire like 3 feet closer.
So you get it while you're working.
Yeah. That was cool. Like, it had the perfect rock wall to make a little fire, campfire ring.
That was such a great place to have. That was a great wall. We built a ring, had a really good fire. I mean, it was like roaring.
Mm-hmm.
And working on that bull, getting everything done, we did have to like try to flip him over again.
A few times,
Just because he was laying on that funny side. And then you guys were just quick with the D-bone and the hang.
That was a little train. You guys would cut a...
That was clutch.
Yeah. I'd just pull him up to Nate, and Nate would D-bone, and I'd throw him in the tree. We had a good little system going.
We had a great... I mean, it was really efficient. I mean, the shot cracked off probably before 4:30. Reminisced, spend time together probably by 5:30. Got over to the bull and probably found him by, I would think, 6:30. Took some time for photos and all of that and started the fire. So we probably started getting on him by like 8.
Yeah, probably around 8.
And I thought we made really great work of him. You know, you were great with helping me like kind of, you break down an animal. Sure. It's pretty A, B, C, D, but of that size.
Yeah. It gets a little bit different.
That's where it's very different. There's just much more canvas to work with when you're doing that. And then you're having me like, hey, if you can just help me hold these legs up, because I don't know if it was rigor mortis or just like cold, but he was like setting up.
He got setting hard.
So then holding that leg and then working that under. And once you get it off, we had to cut some lines or like some holes in his legs. And you're like, you got him? You're like, hold on.
No.
Pick him up and then really settle in, get him up there. You guys were breaking him down. Yeah. The deer bags came in clutch for deboning. We thought also, do we bone him out? Or do we just leave him and then come back?
Someone made the comment, do we want to try to debone the next day?
No.
And I think someone else said, like, that's going to be rock solid.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be able to debone the next day.
100%.
No matter how long it takes tonight.
Because it was 22
degrees, I think. I think I said it felt colder because of the wind up there.
Yeah. So we knew that the meat was going to freeze. So while he was warm, got all that done and open so we can get everything hung. The deer bags worked out great. Had some scrap left over.
Nate was even impressed with the Go Hunt game bag. He's like, dude, these handles are stout.
Yeah.
He was like, I can't believe they hold this much weight. And I was like, we test them like 250 some pounds.
Yeah, those were just the deer ones. Yeah. I mean, the elk ones would have been just fine.
Mm-hmm. We didn't need the elk bags, honestly. With how we deboned them, those deer bags worked out.
Yeah, that's what Paul was asking ahead of time. And unfortunately, we were sold out of the elk game bags. But he's like, do we need elk game bags? I'm like, no, actually, the deer ones work perfectly for an elk. Maybe a lot of people don't know it, so we'll mention it now.
Yeah.
But if you're going elk hunting and you know you're going to debone, you can get by with just the deer set of game bags because all that debone meat will fit in there perfectly.
Yep.
And then it doesn't, like, sometimes those elk ones are so wide that the meat will just get to the bottom and squat out and like get really fat. Where the deer ones kind of keep it nice and just vertical, so they fit on a load shelf of a backpack.
It was perfect within the frames of our Kefauver frames. It's those art frames just held it in the whole time. It was perfect for it. Also the weight. You don't have to carry around so much extra weight. Yeah. If you want to carry like a large one for like the hide or something, I suppose you probably could.
Yep.
But the only reason why we did run out of bags is because I was trying to get everything off of
and
that
bowl. I will say, Paul got every ounce of neck meat.
He did.
He did his full on due diligence. And I was like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of weird bones in there. And he like literally like goes up and around every single little bone and got every ounce of neck meat. We, at one point pulled him over and I was like, I need you to push down all these guts. I want to get the entire tenderloin. I pulled the tenderloin out and showed it to you.
Yeah.
I was like, this tenderloin is like bigger than a deer
backstrap. Huge.
Yeah. Massive. It was really, even when you picked up the backstrap, I think you said, oh my gosh,
look how big this backstrap is. Waiting for it to end. And dude, it was like that big around. Well, we lost a little of the front one because of the bullet. It got a little funky.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some of that meat, but whatever we could.
And what's crazy though is the bullet didn't hit the shoulder.
Mm-mm.
It was just off it. But the amount of damage that the Barnes 208 LRX did is just like...
I was blown away by that. That thing did some work. In
And it's crazy too. It blew completely through the bull.
Yeah.
Front shoulder, back hip.
I mean, it shoots 3,200 feet per second. So
that's all. You know. I mean, also crazy. Well-placed shot.
Well-placed shot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Perfect shot.
I mean, it was... I had good training. I had good support. So what can I say? But yeah, we'd say what we could. The back straps were immense.
Mm-hmm.
But I had it set like tongue came home.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. You take the tongue home.
Yep, took the tongue home. Tenderloin.
We took the heart.
Took the heart. Mm-hmm. That heart was beautiful. Yeah, oh man. Yeah, I wanted as much as we could possibly take.
We got a bunch.
Without getting crazy.
How are you gonna cook the heart? I mean, not the heart. The tongue. Sorry.
The tongue. So I was thinking of just like boiling it. You can boil it and soften up that tongue. That tongue texture. Remove that. And at that point, or you could just slow cook it. Mm. And then once you slow cook it, what you'd end up doing is you can just dice it, or you could do it. My uncles used to do it with beef tongues. They used to put obato sauce on it with bay leaves and some garlic or onion. Ooh. And then as that slow cooks, you take that, and we would have these things called bolillos or fresh just rolls. You throw it on there with a scoop of beans and you just eat it like that. And it's just like a very soft texture.
Are you pulling off the outer layer of the tongue?
Yeah, that like kind of like that feathery part of it. Yeah, you could get that off of there. Okay. And then you get the meat, the muscle underneath it.
What is it texture wise similar to?
It's very, very soft. Yeah, it's very soft. And it's kind of, it doesn't have like a weird, what you would think to be slimy. It's almost, you know, like really great roast that's not dry or stringy. It's kind of a similar to a roast, but it's denser like steak. In cubes. That's why I like Lengua tacos, and we go to like taco trucks and stuff. But it's very, very good. You could season it with just cilantro, onion, lime, and just hammer it like that if you want to. But I think it's delicious. So I didn't want to waste that because it was a good size. It was a pretty good size tongue. It'll make a nice little meal.
Yeah.
The heart, I figured I would just like thinly slice, almost like a little like crescent moon shapes, and maybe just brown it in butter and just do some roasted jalapeno and onion and either make little tacos or just do that on the side with something else.
Yeah.
I was going to try for the liver, but Nate's like, you guys were saying like, they're kind of hard to keep. So, and also it's cold. It was way up in there. We were good.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went for the heart, you were showing me how to get around that rib bone, and we cracked one of those ribs and it was meaty.
Yeah.
Like meaty. It was like that long and it looked like it had something on it. Like
I just thought, good rib meat.
Man, you cut those into quarters and you slow cook them. Mm-hmm. But I thought, well, we've already got about like 300 and some odd pounds that are going to freeze. We're good. I don't want to be a greedy pig. And then we finally got that hide off, and I made the joke that the hide would have made a beautiful throw. I mean, he was gorgeous through and through. We got a little busted up on the rock fall, but we got all that work done, and then and it was time to head out.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was cold. So we packed. I think one of your bags had what, backstrap,
tenderloin,
and then a bunch of neck meat.
Some neck meat in there.
So I think we did all backstraps, tenderloins, neck meat. And let's talk about the descent. So 1,200 feet of descent that we had to go down. It was 850 yards horizontal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like looking at a map. You're
not that far.
Yeah, we'll be down there in 20 minutes, you know, like straight downhill. But it's literally straight downhill. Yeah. Like the steepest stuff you've ever imagined.
Literally straight downhill. It is like sidestep, meet mm-hmm. your foot, sidestep, mm-hmm. meet your foot, and you're just straight down.
Slowly working
your way. And it was kind of concerning because you've got some pins and needles.
Oh, yeah. Knees have been opened up a few times, but they held up.
Yeah.
A little swollen now.
But are you nervous going down, like just with, because you had, did you have some of the meat with you?
Or not
you,
that day.
No.
I
yeah, I had
Brady
some.
Had the meat
and
that
then,
day.
And then Nate had some. They had some. Okay. Yeah, we left the game bags hung in the aspens. Yeah. We left the rack right there.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I was down. More nervous with the meat the next day.
Oh, okay.
With the snow on the ground.
With the snow on it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that took us, I think it was 49 minutes to descend down to a safer spot where we could start moving through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not expect it to be that long.
I just feel like it never ended. Like we could see you ahead of us and we're like, he's got to be there. And you kept
were still
going.
Looking for it.
Yeah.
He was also looking for sheds.
I might have stumbled into a match set of brown elk sheds.
Can't confirm or deny, but maybe. That's what I've heard.
And you probably heard me say, shed.
Yeah.
I was all excited. And then I was like, ground. This is a match. Yep.
I thought when you yelled, it was you were there. And I was like, oh, yes. But then I was like, oh, wait, no, he's not.
Yeah.
He's got sheds.
And it was crazy, too. It was like we joked earlier, like you rarely, I mean, maybe it's happened to a lot of people, but I rarely find deer sheds like on top of each other.
Yeah.
But I found deer sheds earlier on top of each other.
Right on top.
And then in the dark, find two elk sheds laying on top of each other.
Yeah.
Like, you really started stacking on the weight. You were getting.
Yeah, and I packed them all out. Yeah. I was like, that was dumb. But I was like, Hunter's doing it, and he looks cool.
Yeah.
With two browns are a little heavier than my one white.
And a bag of meat.
Yeah, a little bit extra weight there.
But you had mentioned earlier carrying the rifle, like it heavy for sure, but way worth it.
Yeah.
Way worth it. I think
we because I kept saying, like, we could take different rifles, but it's like, dude, this rifle just kills.
Yeah.
Yep.
Its sole purpose is to kill.
Yep.
Like, that's every rifle, but like, this rifle to me has been really good to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's loaded perfectly, all my hand loads. Like, it just works.
Yep.
Yep.
So it's worth to carry that way. And I did joke with you, like, how's that carrying it? And like, I even said earlier before the hunt, I was like, maybe I'm going to carry the rifle for him the whole time. Cause I don't know if he's going to fall, stumble, something weird happens. But I just want to make sure, like, sure I could fall and stumble too, but I was like, then it's at least on me.
I'm a ballerina, bro.
Yeah. You said you're really sure footed.
Yeah.
And I saw it. You are really sure footed out there. Yeah.
Sure.
And you had to carry that rifle all the way down. I was like, oh, his weight's gotta be
but
brutal.
I mean, to be fair for all of it, it was a long day.
Yeah.
Long day. Especially cause we didn't get much sleep.
Yeah.
Got there super late, woke up super early, and basically just hiked all day.
All day.
That's all we did was hike.
Yep. Like it was down to a better access or exit. We get all the way down the slope after the sheds, super steep. We still had 2.5 miles to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was now 12:20, 12:30.
Mm-hmm. I think it was,
at night.
Mm-hmm.
It was
so it was a long hike out. Yeah, we didn't get back to... we got back to camp at 2:35.
2:30, mm-hmm. Something like that.
A.M.
A.M.
Yeah. By the time we got out.
We might have partaken in some celebratory adult beverages.
Maybe. Some electrolytes. Yep.
Yeah, some electrolytes.
Some electrolytes. And I think you said that you last looked at your phone at 3:52.
Yep. I swear your alarm was going off 24 hours earlier at the same time. And here we are about to go to bed.
We were up for 24 hours. On that whole thing. And so then... We all agreed we'd sleep in.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'd regroup and we'd go in super light.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing we slept in.
Yeah. It
snowed all morning.
All morning. Yeah. Super windy.
Yeah. We were trying to beat a storm. We saw that our weather showed that it was going to snow 8, 10, and 12 a.m. Yep. Or 8 a.m., 10 a.m., 12 p.m. And then the wind was going to go from high to low.
Yep.
So we were going to delay our morning a bit, knowing that it'd be a late night to pack in again. Because we now had this... What did we do the first day? 10 and change?
10.5 miles.
10.5 miles.
10.5 miles on Saturday.
Yeah.
That's the total on my GPS watch.
Yeah. So that means we were at least in the bucket for another 8 to 10.
Yep.
So we get everything sorted, empty out all of our stuff, and we went light. Like it was food, water, and you were even contemplating. I think you dumped water.
I dumped water when we got to the top of the bowl because I was like, I'm not carrying any
more. We went
water.
Uber light. I found clothes I didn't know I had that I thought I had left
that
behind.
That was so funny. You had extra clothes with the day before and packed on the mountain. They were buried at the bottom of your backpack. I thought that was hilarious.
The whole time.
Because you were like, that kind of messed you up mentally. You're like, I forgot all my stuff. I can't believe it. I never forget these things.
Yeah.
But when you, like, I don't know, from my mind, when I plan for these things, do you have everything you need? Do not show up unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, expect to have some problems and then overcome them because this is what happened. You were nice enough. You're like, hey man, I got a second Merino hoodie. Do you want to take it? And I said, are you sure? Like I brought a second one just for that reason.
Yep.
I had three rain jackets, two pairs of rain pants, two down jackets, a down pair of pants, several socks. I mean, we had some gear we had to look at too for some stuff we're working on. Two vinyl harnesses, yeah. Two tripods. I just, okay, we're good. And then I forget my freaking base in Merino. Yeah. And to me, I'm like, you know, working with gear, you layer up, you protect your core, you stay warm.
Yep.
So you don't let the elements beat you up at least.
Yeah.
You were nice enough to lend me your hoodie. And then we're getting ready to lighten up, and I'm like, oh, shit, here it is. Yeah. So then I felt better. Bull's already on the ground. Yeah. Changed our hoodies. Anyways, we head out. I think we headed out about, like, one?
One-ish.
There's one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we thought we could still make it there before dark.
Yep. But and miss the storm.
Yeah. It stormed the whole entire time we hiked up.
Yeah.
Snowing. Super windy.
Super windy, man.
15 like, that wind was brutal once we got on that so ridge line. And we tried to go up a different way on the mountain to try to, like, save a little bit of time. So we had to gain some elevation and get on that side. And the wind just was ripping
up there.
We did. I mean, I think we did hit an elevation point, though, where it was just like, oh, we're right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we actually saved a lot of time versus going the other way that we did the day before. I think it took us, like, 10 or 12 minutes to get across that saddle.
We got that game trail.
It's game trail
the game changer. Yeah, that was huge.
But we were 15 to 20 heading into it, snow pelting us in the face and just cold. And I think it was 18.
It was cold.
It was cold. But then we just got on the other face again. So, like, let's get on the opposite face of the wind so that the mountain will block us from the wind. But the wind was still coming down on top of us. And then we had to go through the stupid aspens.
Oh, man. Rocky aspens.
And then so much rocks underneath it. And then the snow, we had like a half inch to an inch of snow, and it was that powder snow. So it was just
slick.
Just, moved underneath you the whole entire time.
Yep. You beefed it pretty good in those trees, too.
I had one
right before we were about to get
literally, I looked up because I saw the end of the aspens. And then next step, I just slipped right after underneath. And broke the zipper on the pants. I have a bruise about that long in the leg now.
Oh.
But I didn't feel it at the time. I just popped back up, like, we're good. Come to last night, and there's a bruise there. But I'm glad that was the only slip.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
That was a pretty bad fall. It looked like your leg just went out.
Yeah.
And you just bounced off the ground, and you popped right back up.
Yeah, but like I said, in the moment, I was I'm fine. But there was a rock there, apparently. But nothing. I'm glad that was the only slip. I can take that. Mm-hmm. Going down is what I was scared for.
But it was that soft, sticky snow.
Yep.
Just coated over those all like aspen rocks. Limbs and rocks. So you're walking on like rollers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just step slip and trying to dig in. And once we got out, you can kind of see our saddle. It was more just like homeward bound and just womp, just motoring.
Just had to get out of those aspens.
And got
that was out of the aspens. Got up to the bull.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where like shit started getting real.
Oh yeah.
Cold.
Super cold.
Super windy right there. More windier than we thought. Still snowing a little bit. And this is when we had to I was like, hey, you got any hand warmers? And all of our hand warmers were in our kill kit.
Yep.
And we obviously dumped our kill kit to save weight. Mm-hmm. So it was funny because I kept seeing Paul, he would take off his 30 gloves that he has on. And that was like a running joke the whole entire hunt. Always be waiting for Paul to put his gloves on.
Yeah.
He put one glove on, another glove, another glove. I swear he had four.
Yeah,
of them.
Stupid fingers would turn inside out when I take the glove off and I'm sitting there like dangling it around. And so at one point, like, I'm fine to hike. I will be cold. We'll keep moving. And so everyone's kind of standing there looking at me, and we were on a saddle, and you were like, are you still putting your gloves on? And he still was.
He was still trying to put his gloves on.
My gosh. I was trying to be efficient.
But when we're at the bowl, like, we would take our gloves off really quickly, try to deal with some of the buckles because you're trying to put the meat on your load shelf.
Yep.
We were all just going to throw the meat in the tube in the backpack. We said, screw it. We're just dumping it right in there. And it was just funny, though. Like, you do it for a little bit. Then we're starting to tie the rack on, instantly put a glove on, try to deal with it, take it off really quickly, because your hands were just getting numb so fast up there.
Fast. Yeah.
Why do we forget, some hand warmers? Yeah. Why do we we had some, fire starter if we need to. We talked about maybe making a fire, but like by the time we make the fire, we could have already been down and started moving, and then you're going to start warming up. So I was like trying to be smart about that stuff, but I was like, why do we forget hand warmers? Because our hands were cold.
Bitterly cold. I think with the cold and like the slight breeze, you said it was 13
degrees.
Yeah.
That's what the InReach said.
And so we also had one little thing that we were supposed to keep doing is I was supposed to drink my bottle of Jameson I got from some friends of ours at Kafar who sent it to me.
Packed it around the entire
time. I packed it around the entire time.
And then you packed it back up on the mountain. You're like, I'm going to take this Jameson when I get to the top.
We were supposed to drink it when the bull went down. Didn't. It got cold. We did the fire. We came down. So you said, when we get to our meet, we're some pictures. You're going to drink that Jameson, damn it. And we got there. screw it, let's get off the mountain.
Yeah, because it's already dark.
Yeah, we're like, load this thing up and we got to get out here.
There's no daylight this time.
And then now we do our descent again down a snowy slope.
Yeah.
And that was even worse.
So then, well, we had to put my rack up.
Yep.
Because otherwise it would have drugged.
Especially on that slope.
Yeah, the steepness of that hill was so steep. And like, I'm sure people look at the pictures like, oh, that's unsafe. But it's like, it was dark out.
Yeah.
First of all, there's no other hunters back there and it's dark.
Yeah.
But like, you can't have flipped it over because we haven't said the beams are 52 and a half inches long.
Yeah.
So like, they were going to drag through all those rocks going downhill. And then I mentioned too, it's like, one thing my dad's always said is like, when you kill an animal, sure, you want to pack it all, like the heavy weight, like, sure, we're strong enough, we've been working out a year, but you don't want to hurt yourself on that moment to impact another hunt later.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you can say you could heal up, but you couldn't slip, twist your knee, and then you're not going to be able to continue hunts forever. So, mm-hmm. like, I was like, flip the rack upwards. That way, if we need to take a break, you can just take a break. Sit down whenever you want to and rest your legs.
Yeah.
Because we don't need to hurt any of our bodies going down. And like I said, the rack would have drugged the entire way.
Yeah, how steep that was. I mean, there was no getting over. Like, it was incredibly steep.
Incredibly steep.
I mean, everyone knows if you've been in that kind of terrain, it's insane.
I got to witness the Paul shuffle a lot. Mm-hmm. It's like there's little two steps going down. Like, literally, you're going sideways for most of the way down that slope.
I mean, you know, sometimes I've noticed it. Like, you have such a gait. When people talk about keeping up with Brady, there's two things. Your cardio needs to be at its very best.
At the top.
And you better have a 36-inch gait. Yep. Because holy shit. Because you and I are tall, the same mm-hmm. height. I think I have like a 35-inch inseam. You have a 36, 36 and a half. Yep. I was trying to keep up with Brady's steps in the snow, and my toes would hit your heels on every one. And it's just a matter of like you were literally a foot ahead of us mm-hmm. the entire time. He's behind me, and we're at like a decent pace because we're keeping up. You weren't just doing fast. It was just the pace. So when I was going down, I thought, I'm going to shuffle to save my knees. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I was feeling as my legs are pumping. Mm-hmm. Like, I was feeling really good. My back, everything was centered mm-hmm. and trying to just shuffle. And I'd see a little trail, shuffle. We're probably going straight down. It would have been fine. But I was so worried that if I did, I'd zip mm-hmm. and go right back.
Yeah.
So I did the little Paul shuffle all the way down. I'd turn and go. And we worked out until we got to almost all the way down. I think we were about halfway. And I stopped to readjust because then I was hitting a lot of trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were hitting a lot of trees.
And that bull was starting to like lean. So it was nice when I turned towards the slope because actually it was like a counterbalance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then when we got down, it started to wrench. And at that point, your core is just, it was starting to feel like a farmer's carry from hell. And then we got down to the flat to get back out. And then after that, you and I, we re-cinched and re-centered everything.
Got it nice and tight, nice and centered, and you're rolling.
The thing that's crazy, though, I think we all said it, though, on the downhill with all the meat in the rack, it felt like we were going a lot faster.
Way faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It felt way smoother than the night before.
Yeah.
Maybe because we were more cautious because of the snow and slipping. But it took us, I think, an hour and a half
to get
down there. It didn't feel it.
No.
We still had a lot of weight, but I was like, I was kind of surprised.
It was felt also like 6 p.m. We'd also slept for like 10 hours.
We didn't work on a bowl for multiple hours cutting it up.
We were hydrated. I don't know about you. I ate a ton before we left.
Mm-hmm.
I was really dehydrated when we got back to camp that night, the first night. So I drank a ton of water. So we were all really like, I think, green.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was just the night before we were just so burnt out after the whole day. And then the bowl, taking care of him, is just like coming off that mountain. We were just ready to be back at camp.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I won't say the exact miles how far we were in, but it was a stupid distance.
Yeah.
And that's why there's probably no one back there.
Yep.
Well, and that's why it was really fun.
Or they are, though. I mean, that was one thing. There's always times on my hunts where I'm like, well, how far, in my mind, I think, how far do you have to push yourself? And it's a rhetorical question. Until you realize how far I think you do need to go. You did it on your deer hunts this year. You know, and how far you just do it all the time. How far you need to go, but then it answers a question. That's you go where the animals are.
Mm-hmm. And the animals were there, and we had to go stupid.
You had to go far.
Think about it. Where we were seeing all the other bulls on the other side, for where we were at, where we shot from, they're basically straight across from us. So they're all at least that far in or further. And there was no bulls closer. All the cows were down low. The bulls were all
and the elevation bed. Far.
Yep.
They were all up.
Yep. At least halfway or higher.
Yep. So, we got to that point, and then what? Just the pack out.
Pack out.
And we were really efficient, you guys. Like, we left nothing that there was having to go back for. We really just sucked it up, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a few breaks here and there. Readjusted your pack. Like you said, got the rack slightly more straight on your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I was just staring at the ground in the snow and one step in front of the other.
The minute we hit that saddle, it was over with. I remember we were sitting in the snow, staring up at the stars, and you're like, all right, I'm getting cold. And we were all, because you had kind of beaten us at that point. You were there for a little bit already.
Yep.
And you told us the time and the distance, and I was like, just knock this out. Yeah, you and you're said, like, that's go. All right, let's go beast mode.
Yep. Yep. We did say multiple times too, which I'm glad we said is like, you're only going to get this moment once in your life. Yep. Soak it up.
Yep.
We talked about some people might not enjoy this part of the process, but I was like, this is to me the funnest part.
Yeah.
Suffering with the boys.
Yep.
Having fun.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's work and yeah, it sucks at the time.
Yeah.
But like, it is the most enjoyable thing when you're successful and you're on that pack out. I enjoy pack out so much.
Yeah.
It's what you work so hard for.
You work so hard.
Yeah.
And you're rewarded with that. And it's like, I think when you started getting closer, once we finally started getting down, maybe I'm jumping ahead, but I was like, you have 3 minutes left until we're at the side by side. Like, enjoy these next 3 minutes.
Cause
like,
then it's over.
Literally just enjoy
it.
Now, there was a lot of laughs going on. Like, still, like, I had to also shuffle around trees. And I had to turn around.
With a cliff on the other
side. Yeah, I forgot about that. Because the rack kept catching on everything. That's the downside of putting a rack up instead of, like, angling the tines down. Yeah. Like, it was catching on everything.
I was bending over the cliff sides, like, just trek and pull out.
Me and Nate are super nervous behind them. We're like, just a little right. Like, just, not too much.
There was a couple of times when I just snapped limbs off.
Or just, like, go through it.
Yeah, just go through it.
Forget it.
And you kept apologizing to me and Nate, like, sorry guys for the pace. We're like, Paul, we're on your time.
Yeah, and I kind of just felt bad, but I felt like we were moving.
100%. We're like,
just,
do not.
And I was like, you guys need to go ahead. But I'm just motoring.
Yeah, we're enjoying this. We're here for you right now. This is.
But
this
it
is
did all like you. once we'd readjusted that skull, and if it was centered over my feet, it felt amazing. Mm-hmm. Like if you have your packs correctly set.
Yep.
Yeah.
And to carry weight,
the arc frame.
Yeah.
Because this was
super impressive. This is the first year
running it.
Yeah, I've been using it because I obviously go back and forth with a few different packs. But like, I really enjoy the Kefauver arc frame.
It handles weight really, really well.
The waist belt, the shoulder straps, like my gosh.
Yeah.
Like it's a good system.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know some other folks have packed out some gnarly shit in those packs, but I felt like if it didn't slip to cinch it up, if it was sent, like, that was my only thing is I think it just slipped because of the layers I had on.
Yeah.
But to walk out with that was phenomenal.
It was great.
I felt so, so good. I think Nate had asked me, he goes, would you change anything about this on the way out? And I'd said, like, shooting it closer to where we came in.
Yeah.
And we laughed and I said, and I told him, I said, I worked my ass off for this moment. And this is exactly what I wanted it to feel like or what I expected it to feel like.
Absolutely.
I didn't think it would happen in the first day.
I know. I didn't either. I was hoping, but I really didn't expect it to happen.
We mentioned it in the office, like maybe jokingly or not wondering. But in my mind, I felt like if it is what it is, and we have the opportunity, I'm going to maximize the opportunity.
Yep.
And it's not because I want it to be over.
Yep.
It's just that I don't want to waste time goofing around. And I told you too, I said, I'm not this giant trophy chaser. I'm not going to settle I'm not going to also eat the tag, but there is this thing I want to find, and it is just a perfect representation of a late season bull.
100%.
I'm glad you didn't get caught up in score.
Yeah.
A lot of people could get caught up in score and be like, I'm only shooting this type of bull. And your bull is big. It scores really well.
Yeah.
But you never once said, I want this score of a bull. You said, I want a representation of the trophy of the animal.
And the only thing I think I did say is like, I just don't want him to be broken.
Yep.
And if he's broken, whatever, fine.
But
I wanted to find a really beautiful, unbroken bull. And boy, did we find him. Like we found just a dandy.
Especially in a unit like that, not getting caught up. It's just...
Mm-hmm. It you was can cool.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, like we had a lot of info dumping in and it's not, and I do appreciate all of the support we got because it was a really cool, like, you know, it takes a village.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of times for someone like me, who's fairly, what I would consider new to some of this stuff, to that pressure, to these, to a hunt like this and everything that can come with the weather, the terrain. And, you know, this place has some history of just breaking souls. I just had in my mind of, I do appreciate all of it, but this will be my hunt with my bull and it's going to be a special one.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I think we captured a cool story. I think we had a great time, a lot of laughs, a lot of fun.
Yep.
I got back to camp pretty late again.
Yeah. Super late.
Yeah.
We're just talking about score a little bit. We haven't scored the bull yet. I'm going to score it for you. I don't know if we'll disclose it, but like it's big.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier, 52 and a half inch main beams. mm-hmm. and it has 18 inch thirds.
Yeah.
So just to start.
Just to start.
Let's tease that part. So it's a big bull.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
And it will be a future Go Hunt original film. So we filmed the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So it's how is that one. Being, is there any pressure or did it feel weird being filmed?
No, not really. I mean, we do a lot of filming here mm-hmm. and I just naturally flow with whatever we need to do for the information. And so I think it was a little different to be in the situation of, you know, now this is your hunt. How do you feel? Yeah. Take us through what is in your mind. And we talked about this too, I didn't take a lot of videos or pictures myself because I was just enjoying this.
Yeah, which you should.
I was just with you guys and we were snacking. I might have fallen asleep a time or two and just glassing. And just there was sometimes when you guys were like looking at bulls and I'm just staring at the hillside like I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm up here doing this thing with you guys.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got a little lost in the moment. And then the camera guy like, hey, take us to what you're doing. So right now we're glassing, just go to these scenes because I have to bring myself back to what also has to happen. But it felt good. It felt real. There was a couple of times too when I was packing out that some of my truth and vulnerability came out where I'm very, very appreciative for the opportunity. And I'm not ashamed of how that's made me feel. Because it's been a journey and it's it's just a freaking great hunt.
Yeah. I kept telling you too, the coolest part of having a hunt filmed is you'll be able to look back on it forever.
Yeah.
Relive like that you, forever. Your family, your friends, other people.
Yeah.
You'll be able to look back and relive every moment of that hunt. That's the coolest part of filming a hunt.
Yeah. And I think other people get to kind of see some other story. There's a lot of cool stories out there, but everyone's got a different perspective to it. And I think it'll be cool to share that with people. So, and I hope there's something in there that's helpful to others. So, what else? And I got to crush that Jameson finally.
You did.
Yeah. You got back to side by side.
It was delicious, by the way. It was cold and delicious.
How about our Waterloos?
How about those?
Oh yeah.
Let's go. I made the guys some salami and cheese sandwiches, packed in my little Yeti, and I took some Waterloo. So every time we got back to the side by side, we had a snack and a drink
and they were
refreshing.
But that one night though, like, they're not frozen until you crack them.
You open them, then they freeze.
Then instantly freeze.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, they got rock solid from the time we got there, and we had a decent drive back to the wall tent. Like mine was froze solid.
Oh, yeah.
I was, like, drinking it throughout the drive, and it was getting slushy as I'm still drinking. I was like, this is...
The first night was nice. They had a little bit of slush in them, and they went downy. The second, and I fell asleep that night on the way back. Yeah, Brady had to wake me up a little bit.
I literally woke up and was like, Paul, you still have your headlamp on. He's like, oh, sorry. He's already asleep.
And driving that bumpy road, and I was
then
like,
we got back to the wall tent, and I'm like, the side by side still idling, and he's like, just leaning over, like sleeping. I'm like, Paul, we're
back.
The second night we go back, and I covered my Waterloo, and I just had my head down because the wind was just bitter.
It was cold.
We got back to camp. I stood up, and it was just frozen. So I just put it in the cup holder, and I was like, just
well,
tomorrow.
Even the water bottles on the mountain, we were packing down. I literally had to take my pocket knife out and like jam the top of my Nalgene to break the ice on them.
I had to work hard to even open my water bottle because it kept freezing at the top.
Yeah. Mustaches were getting frozen.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sticking to the water if you did have water. It was a hell of a hunt.
It was. What a trip.
So...
Yeah, what a story.
Yeah.
Congrats again, Paul.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
congrats.
You guys.
Thank
you.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Glad we could join you on it. And it was just a memorable 48 hours.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it really was. I can't wait to share with everyone because we have that postseason roundup coming up.
Yeah.
Talk to our friends about getting it taken care of. I'm going to get a really cool Euro mount and just especially look at that thing all night.
Every night.
Every day. Yeah. I mean, I caught myself. It was Sunday morning, I think. No, Sunday we packed out. Monday, I woke up and I was just staring at him.
That's what you said. You're staring at the bull in the wall tent.
Yeah, in the wall tent, just looking at him. And I catch myself sometimes just checking out and just thinking about it. It was so cool.
That was awesome.
Hunt of a lifetime. I hope everyone gets that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. And now you've got some points.
Let's hope.
So you've got some planning to do.
Yeah. Already starting. We've been there.
Yeah. So
it's going to be exciting.
Anything
Thank
else
you guys.
You got?
I think if I had some parting words, I'd say if you have like a vision or a dream, just surround yourself with people that make you better and stay positive. The part that I thought about was when we were walking that bull out, I kept telling myself, this sucks because I'm going to get to enjoy it for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So let it suck.
Mm-hmm.
Let it be the hardest thing I'll probably ever do. My body felt good. I also had 3 studs helping with the meat. So imagine doing that by yourself, though.
Oh, man.
Going in that far, out that far. That'd be a different story.
Multiple trips, yeah.
Um, But I think if you surround yourself with positive, supportive people, it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
It makes all the difference in the world. So yeah, that's it. And if you have questions, ask.
Yeah.
Learn. Put yourself in that position to learn.
Be willing to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Be willing. That's a good one. Yeah. But yeah, that's about it, man. It was a great time and I can't thank you guys enough. And shout out to Nate Niebel flowing out to help us out. So
going through all that.
And actually, he had a family pheasant hunt that because we were done early, he's now going to be home in time for. Nice. So
that's good. Awesome.
We all win.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. You're welcome. There you go. But anyways, yeah, man.
We'll wrap it on that. That was a good recap.
Yeah, it was. Thank you, guys.